apology that I came late. I literally just arrived this morning from PE, you know, 9:30, to be confronted with traffic on N2. It meant going via N1, coming through here. Mrs. Twala is in the same predicament. She is literally stuck on N2. That's the reality that we were confronted with this morning. Mr. Van Dalen was asking whether did I injure or get injured. And then I mentioned to him that the accident was not on me. It happened with people, whoever else who was involved. Welcome, Mama Twala. I was a little faster than you on the road. The item that we are about today, initially it was when we sent the initial brief to the department and also to the industry. The item was meant to get a briefing from the department itself and also the trading industry. The matter that is before us is a matter that has been in the news you know, the boxing of each other between the industry and also the exporters and importers. And related to that, there's been an issue of the tariff structure and the proposition thereof. The matter also involved ultimately ITAC and also the Competition Commission. There has been some good amount of work done on the part of ITAC. The subject has since changed due to unavailability of ITAC and the subsequent processes that they are engaged in. Correspondence that has been sent through and also communication that I would have had with some of the people within the trading industry. Correspondence dated 21st of August. Thank you for the invite. Legally, the invitation on the investigation on poultry tariffs by ITAC has not yet reached a stage where it could be shared in public. I must mention that I've also had a one-on-one with some of the members of ITAC to an extent. What became very clear is that this matter is before the Minister of Trade and Industry for finalization. Currently, the process is a long-winded one, wherein there has to be consultation within SACU itself, the Customs Union, and other related bodies, because this is not a matter just for us here in South Africa. So that's the process that has been involved in this whole matter that is before us. For this reason, therefore, that we still had the industry keen on coming before us and also the exporters and importers to brief Parliament, because this matter has been out there and without us getting a sense of what the issues are, apart from reading out there. Hence, we are here today. I just trust that that explains the background on which we are here today. There is also correspondence from the Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries dated the 6th of 9th, which is September, basically talking to the same issue, briefing by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and everybody else, and the impact of full tariff increase on poultry imports the correspondence goes on and on and on. In summary, it stipulates the same effect that the ITAC, an impact that it has, or it shall have had for us, if we were to go ahead having to get a full brief. So the minister basically confirms what ITAC is saying, or has said. So we have agreed that we should still go ahead and have a briefing, despite all of these concerns raised both by ITAC and also by the minister and the department. So I, without long explanation, the intention there is to say we are meeting on a different course than initially planned. That being the briefing by the industry. They have been doing some work. They have done some work. Here we are talking about the Poultry Association and the meat importers and exporters. And we have since been informed in the morning that the Competition Commission equally, you know, is ready to present itself on the same subject matter. So that's where we are. Mrs. Day?
Thank you, Chairperson. Is it possible for you to send those two communications from the two departments to the rest of the portfolio so that we also know what has been said? And I must say, Chair, there has been a concern, one of my concerns with having this meeting is that the process is actually, as far as I am aware, quite far down the track. So I agree that it's important that we do get the presentations and that we then after this meeting could make maybe a better clarification on what's our role in all of this. But I think it's important that we do get those letters now even so that we can scan through it while the presentation is happening so that we know what both departments said to make an informed decision. Thank you, Chief.
It's a straightforward matter. As I said, the matter is before the Minister of Trade and Industry. So almost everything else has been done. So it is at that stage where there has to be consideration by the Minister of Trade and Industry on recommendations by ITAC. I think it's a straightforward matter, as I mentioned. It's a matter of time. In fact, was it 2 weeks ago when we met Mr. Skitter?
Yes, Your Honourable, it's about a week ago.
A week ago. Yeah. That the matter was literally, you know, ready to go come before us or announcement in a week's time or 2 weeks' time. To an extent, there was even a proposal that perhaps we should even, you know, hang on a bit, maybe a week or two or three before the announcement, you know. But we thought we should still go ahead with this session. So it's the matter, as you correctly pointed out, is literally far down the line. It's almost literally ready for an announcement by the Minister of Trade and Industry. This correspondence equally is straightforward. There are no state secrets there. We only had one apology, members, that we can talk of. And again, the apology is to be acknowledged if it is only a written apology. It is from Mrs. Nyalungu. She's attending a SCOPA meeting. Her However, she will be available for the meeting of the 11th and the 13th of September. I just thought, members, just before we get on to our business, we should announce that officially now we do have, as of the 6th of September, the office of the speaker did receive correspondence from the Minister of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries regarding a bill before Parliament, Marine Living Resource Amendment Bill. It is hereby submitted for introduction in the National Assembly in terms of standing rules. The bill is attached. Accordingly, therefore, the implication on this is that our program will then have to be changed accordingly. So we had requested the committee secretariat to come up with a draft proposal for the amendment bill to be presented. It has since been announced, or rather tabled, published in the ATC of today. Draft bill submitted in terms of Joint Rule 159, Marine Living Resource Amendment Bill, submitted by the Minister of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, referred to our committee and also the Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs. So that's where we are. The ball is now in our court for us to start a process on this amendment bill. So it's official. It has been coming. It is now before us. Mr. Abram, Ms. Bang.
Chairperson, I have taken careful note of the remarks you have made. It would appear that the matter is now at such an advanced stage that some or other announcement seems to be imminent, from what I gather. Now, Chairperson, I would just like to determine whether there is anybody here that represents the Department of Agriculture, albeit in the capacity of merely an observer for the department, as well as perhaps somebody from DTI. Because the way I see this whole thing, Chair, those departments are central to whatever decisions have been made. And it would have been good to know that there are somebody from those departments here, some people, who could report back to their principals. And of course, depending on whatever decision or resolution the committee takes at the end of the presentations. All I'm saying, Chair, is that it must not be a question of the horse having bolted, and we are now trying to close the stable door. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Panga?
Chair, I'm a bit confused. You might have to clarify me, because you raised this issue yourself. I still remember in M46. You picked up the issue of terrorists as we're dealing with the issue of food safety and so on and so on. And you said that we must not only deal with this aspect, as things that in relation to terrorists that will be coming in, that we should engage with as a committee. It could have been 2 to 3 months back that we spoke about the importance of having this kind of an interaction. And from my part, I'm very disappointed. Such that the letter, the content, we are not sure of what it seeks to communicate, whether it excuses DTI's officials to come in front of this committee, and excuses forestry and fisheries and agriculture to come to this committee. Because my point is that even if we are meeting with stakeholders, the department that is directly accountable to this committee is supposed to be here. And I don't see them here, because they are here. I think that's the DDG usually we say senior officials as a committee. I'm not saying they are not senior, but we always talk about the people who have an authority to take decisions. And the absence of the department today sends many questions, and also the DTR. If the process is not closed, and I don't think as Parliament we cannot say anything even to DTR, because issues that we're going to deal with in relation to tariffs, they affect agriculture directly. Therefore, from my part, I don't think we should be happy and leave that in that particular fashion. For us to sit here as officials, for stakeholders, the implementers are not here. But I'm not saying we must stop this kind of presentation. But I'm looking forward to the way forward that we're going to bring. Because if we get presentations and there are things that we want to suggest going forward, if we need those departments to come in, we must be able very firmly to say this committee was very interested to the processes that is unfolding. I don't know, maybe you'll explain it better, but to me it's not acceptable that there's no even single official welfare visitors to come and make presentations. I assume that Parliament speaks on behalf of the people. Therefore, we are supposed to be given that opportunity to speak to both departments in relation to what we're going to be discussing. Thank you.
What we are doing today, we are getting a briefing from the industry. We couldn't say, let us stop everything. I hear your point. The point is the department needs to listen, needs to take its own notes, needs to... But the point here is that we will still have that session with the department when we have that full-blown report. To an extent that the department, an invitation was not extended to them, that they should also be here. So that's what happened in a nutshell. But because Wesiwe is part of a team that is here as what do you call yourself? Parliamentary liaison officer. That's literally, she attends every session that we have. So that's the situation that we're in. I'm not sure if Mr. Abram, you see the point here that Mr. Abram, Mr. Banga, is that we have extended the invitation despite the situation. I'm sure you do have the letter before you now, where in the department that requested, it's been copied somewhere. The minister explained very, very clearly that unfortunately government departments are not ready to come before us. Yes, they have to be here to listen to what the industry has to say. That, I guess that's the point you're raising. So that when we come together, all of us, they have a sense of what the industry has said. But I must mention that they have gone through this process themselves with the departments, economic development, trade and industry, and also agriculture and fisheries. They have gone through this process themselves. Hence, the matter now is before the executive, in particular trade and industry, which is the lead agency, government department, so far as this matter is concerned. What I would propose we do listen to what the industry has to say. We do engage with what, so that it empowers us for that time. When that time arises, at least we shall have had a background, because they have been boxing each other in the media out there. We take an interest in that. That's what we are here. We're here to listen, we're here to engage with them, to get a sense, a better understanding. So that when that time comes, at least we shall have gotten through this process in better understanding where we come from and where we are and where we want to go. Mrs. Paliso? Shall I take you to be the last?
I want to say something on the second point.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. We really need this information and want to be better equipped. come the time we engage DTI, then we know that we are also better equipped from the horse's mouth. For us, for them to empower us with information will be much better for us to engage DTI chapters. I thank you.
Do we still want to further engage on the issue?
Chair, I just need to make a point.
Okay. Noted, Mr.
Chairperson, as the parliament of the people, we have to listen to everybody. I agree with you. There's no problem with that. My problem is that the dealings that have taken place up to now have been more at an administrative level between state departments and the sector concerned. Now, when Parliament is engaging with sectors, it is expected of the department to be here even if they are not participating or even if they have no presentation to make. So the level of parliamentary liaison officer being here is, to my mind, not the department being here. It's a parliamentary liaison officer of the ministry. We needed somebody senior from the department. By that, I am not saying that we must stop proceedings. We must go ahead. While they are here, they've taken trouble and expense to be here. Let's listen to them. But, Chairperson, we need to make it very clear that if Parliament requires the department to be here, there should be no excuses. A senior person from the department would suffice, but they are supposed to be here. And that's a point I want to drive home, Chair. For far too long, Chair, we have departments that just sort of brush us aside. They're telling us they have nothing to contribute. But they have a lot to listen to. Why are we getting people together here? Because we want to listen. We want to know. So that's all I'm saying, Chair. That we need to be stern, and we need to see that the department respects Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Van Dalen, you being the last?
Yes, I don't want to speak on this issue. I want to speak on the issue about the MLRA. That you said that we have received as a committee. Can we, before the end of this meeting, get a copy of that and which version of that MLRA is now before the committee? Because there have been different versions of that. I want to see the one that has been approved by Cabinet so I can prepare myself. And I'm sure the rest of the committee as well. Thank you.
As you might have listened to me carefully, Mr. Van Dalen, I did say that the publishing of the ATC has just happened today. So we are all in the same ha. We are all receiving the same information. So I don't know what else do you want to... The last correspondence, you shall notice, members, that we start off with these correspondences so that we just, you know, take them aside. This one also shall be distributed to members as well. It is also from the Minister. Visit by the OIE Scientific Committee on Animal Diseases. Yes, Mr. Stay. It talks basically about the Scientific Committee on Animal Diseases that will be visiting Southern Africa, including South Africa, to verify if these countries are still able to maintain their official disease status on FMD, foot and mouth disease. It shall be coming end of October. So in a nutshell, that's the issue. I must mention, you must take note of on this one, I mean, WYSIWYS, that you know, there are a number of diseases that we have been confronted with. Foot and mouth has been one of those, especially in relation to some of the export work that has been done by the industry. And also, you know, I've since picked up the animal horse, African horse sickness, and also the avian flu. members that we should really take a session on this one. You know, just getting a scan of the kind of diseases that we have in the country on our animals. Because these diseases impact negatively on our ability to export and the loss of income that is incurred by the industry. To an extent also very important, the extent in which we are able to consume ourselves because we end up having to import a lot of meat as a country because of the diseases that we have on our animals.
Okay.
I think that should be it, members, for now, both in terms of apology, in terms of explaining the main object of the meeting, also in terms of, you know, clarity on why the department cannot be here, and of course, lastly, the tabling of the Marine Living Resource Amendment Bill. So all of those things have been taken care of. We now only have one item before us that we shall have to deal with until we finish our meeting. That is allowing the industry to brief us. If it is all possible that we can speak to the document, I see some of your slides are quite, you know, extensive, basically getting, you know, to the issues themselves without giving us a long history, you know, that starts with the day, you know, a human being, depending on where you come from, either was created or evolved. The evolution of humankind or the creation of humankind depends where you come from. We don't want to start there, you know, to the issue. The program gives us
presentations and then ask questions, or are we going to do a presentation and ask questions, because I'm just looking at the time, Chair.
I think the best would be for us to get all the presentations, we take notes,
yeah,
and then we respond.
Yeah.
I must also warn you, industry players, that when we ask questions, we shall have to ask all of the questions. You must take notes, and then we shall respond to all the questions. Person who shall have asked, just listen carefully when I say so and so, and then you make note on that person's name so that when you respond. Importers? Exporters?
Honorable
Chair. Introduce yourself and the delegation you are with.
Good morning, Honorable Chairman and committee members. Thank you very much for hosting the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters today. I think that this briefing opportunity is long overdue. I think that, as you've already referred to, Mr. Chairman, there's been a lot of debate in the media, and unfortunately that has come about to a large extent because we haven't had these types of platforms to be able to hear our views. So thank you very much for this opportunity. In terms of our team that we've got here today, We've got David Walpert, who's on my right here. He's the Chief Executive Officer of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters. We then have Anthony Schneiderman, who's the Chairman of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters. He's at the back of the room there. We then have myself. My name is George Salvi, and I'll be doing the presentation today. I'm on the subcommittee relating to chicken of the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters. We also have two additional members with us today, Honourable Chair. One is Donald Mackay, who is one of our international trade advisors, and the company that he has is XA International Trade Consultants. And we also have our legal representative, Amy Schkicker from Wertheim Becker. So that's our team, but I'll be doing the talking today. It's a pity that ITAC and DAF couldn't have representatives here today. I don't wish to get into the debate that has already taken place around that, but I think it's extremely important for us to be able to air views that we need to have the decision makers and the administrators that hold, if I can use the term, the axe over industry's head. At the end of the day, the only way we can have long-term successful industries is by the participants in the industries and the regulators above them all working hand in hand. I think we'll try to keep, because of the limited time constraints, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, but I will touch on a number of issues. But I think it may be opportune, depending on the, let's say, hearings today and the information that is shared, that maybe a more extensive and intensive session needs to be held where certain of these issues can be debated with all role players at a convenient time. And we would welcome that as Amy. Something which I would like to raise, and importers, in this instance we're talking here as importers, although we'd love to also be talking as exporters, but can't today for various reasons, and I'll touch on those just now. But we're all South Africans, and importers, businesses, employ people, have capital investment in this country, and we all want to see a strong South Africa, and we do want to see a strong agricultural sector in South Africa, because at the end of the day, that leads to a healthy industry, a healthy country, and we believe that there is a role for imports, and imports actually serve a role of balancing the needs of the consumers in South Africa. My apologies then that the annexures which are at the back of the packs that have been handed out weren't emailed in advance, but unfortunately they were brought together from many different sources. So the presentation had been sent out to members, but the annexures hadn't been, but everyone should have a pack of annexures at the back. And then just to give context, chicken meat is the most widely consumed animal protein in South Africa. Over 60% of all animal protein consumed is chicken meat in South Africa. This equates to approximately 36 kilograms per person per year, and it is therefore the most important agricultural product in terms of the protein sector, so I think it is very important for the voice of all participants to be heard. We've split our presentation into 3 points, and we've used this against the Portfolio Committee agenda, which was said to us, Mr. Chairman. We're going to deal in part one, what is the status quo, what impact of current tariffs on competition and competitiveness, implications of local industry tariff increases on imports. And then we'll move to part two, status of poultry tariffs and implications to the local industry and consumers. And part three, possibly certain suggestions from our perspective on the way forward. If I can then deal with the status quo. Currently there are 5 tariff headings which govern the products that we are dealing with in terms of chicken. And as you can see, the majority of the duties are sitting at 27%. In terms of a basic agricultural product, a basic need of people, that is already, in terms of international standards, a relatively high import duty. The Poultry Association have requested an increase in import duties to be capped at the 82%, which is the bound rate in terms of South Africa's agreements with the World Trade Organization, and there have been numeric quantums which are on the schedule which show the amount of duty which has been requested in terms of rands and cents per kilogram. The question which we have, and we would put to the poultry industry in South Africa is at these levels of 9.91 for chicken carcasses, which is effectively chicken bones, and at 6.53 a kilogram for bone-in chicken portions, we should be questioning if those levels of protection are actually required, or is South Africa a competitive industry in terms of global standards or not. In terms of quality measures, South Africa has a very strict requirement in terms of imported chicken. This requirement is both in terms of disease status of exporting countries and bacteriological requirements. We believe that imports are top quality and that the standards in most instances, or in all instances, Honorable Chair, are actually higher than the local standards practiced in South Africa. And let me take the committee through today the actual import process when importing chicken into South Africa. Firstly, there's an agreed protocol between the Department of Agriculture and the exporting country. That protocol takes into account then the disease status of the exporting country. In all instances, exporting facilities that send product to South Africa, provided the disease status of the country is acceptable to South Africa, have to meet EU and Food Inspection Standard Services standards of the USA. There are no EU or FSIS approved facilities in South Africa currently. Import permits are then issued by the Department of Agriculture, and this determines the requirements from the exporting country. The health certificate is then issued with every consignment from the exporting country to the government, being the Department of Agriculture in South Africa. That health certificate says that that consignment complies with South Africa's import requirements. Once that product arrives in South Africa, we don't take the exporter's word for it. At the port of entry, the Department of Agriculture detains every consignment. They do a visual test. They also take samples, which they send to the laboratories for bacteriological testing. And only after those results have come back and that product has been cleared that it complies with South Africa's import requirements, is that product then released for consumption in South Africa. Now, that was quite a bit of information in a nutshell, but that shows the strict requirements that all imported products has to comply with, and we believe that imports are of top quality. In terms of imports then, the import regime is extremely strict and onerous. Imports from other countries are not brined before they arrive in South Africa. Once the product has arrived in South Africa and being cleared for home consumption, then there may be certain of that product which then goes into the trade, and you may find that that product is brined. Our estimation at the moment is that only about 1.5% equivalent of South Africa's production is brined after import into South Africa, and currently we are only aware of one facility that is brining, and that facility is governed in South Africa by the same regulations that the local South African industry has to comply with. So in our opinion, there are equivalent standards in terms of what happens to imported product after it arrives in South Africa to what applies to the local industry. We believe that SAPA has imported or tested certain imported products, and that those test results have been published, the results of those tests have been published in the media, saying that the South African or the imported product doesn't comply with local standards. We weren't consulted, and we would definitely assist SAPA in collecting samples and doing a proper baseline study should that be required, and that may well be something that we should be looking at for the future. In terms of serial offenders, there have been historically Competition Commission findings against the local industry. There are labeling, brining, and agricultural product standards dispensations. I'm not going to take you in detail through those now, but all of those issues are touched on in Annexure 8, which is in the pack which we have handed out. But we have found that the local industry in many, many instances has not complied with the regulations which are already in place in South Africa.
not sure how that slide got deleted. There seem to be a few slides which have gone missing from what was emailed through, but okay. Just in terms of imported volume and related to consumption, I see that slide, unfortunately, for whatever reason, hasn't come through on what was emailed through to the department. Imported volume related to consumption. South Africa's total consumption is just over 2.1 billion kilograms of chicken meat a year. Imports for last year were 230,000 tons, which equates to 10.2% of local production. We don't believe that that is any way unhealthy. We actually believe that that helps to promote competition and that there is value added, because that is providing a need to certain sectors of the market that require that product. What is interesting to note is that over the last 7 years, the production of the local South African industry has also grown, and it has grown by 24% over that period, and that is showing a healthy domestic industry as well. And just a note which I may put in here, that executive pay in the 5 listed poultry companies increased by 43% over that same period. In terms of imported volume compared to brining, Amy has calculated that 33% is the average injection rate, and this is taken from SAPA, who was quoted at the South African National Consumer Union AGM recently. If we take total, so that means that 538 million litres of water was brined or injected into chicken in South Africa last year. Total imports for the same period is 238 million kilos, which is less than half of the total water that was injected into chicken. And we believe that this practice, which is being looked at by the Department of Agriculture, needs to be reviewed, and the limits need to be brought into play as soon as possible. The local chicken industry is addicted to protection, and unfortunately I see again that slide has, for whatever reason, not come through on here. But in terms of addicted to protection, just to give context to the current duty application that we are dealing with, Honourable Chairperson, the history of protection that we're aware of goes back to 1997. And let me just take through in chronological order. In 1997, there was a duty put in on bone-in chicken of R2.20 a kilogram. That was the Board of Trade and Tariffs, which was ITAC's predecessor. And in Board Report 3768, which was dated the 23rd of July 1997, the recommendation was that that duty should only be in place for 2 years and then it should be phased out. And that was because in 1997 the Board of Trade and Tariffs said the poultry industry needs to get their house in order and become competitive on a global nature. In 2001, USA dumping case was brought into place. In 2004, there was another application for an increase in duty. That was put through, and there were duties on chicken offals brought into place for the first time, and there was also an increase in duty on whole chickens. In 2006, there was a revision of the USA dumping duty, and the dumping duty was reinstated or maintained. Then in around 2006, and up, it's lasted up until current, brining started becoming fashionable, and the technology relating to that improved and increased dramatically. And that was hugely profitable in the early years for a number of chicken companies as they managed to take advantage of that. But currently, everyone is now playing on the same playing field, and the lifespan of brining has become limited, and the competition there's no competitive advantage for local producers anymore. In 2011, the USA dumping sunset review was done, and ITAC, by their own admission, admits that that was faulty, and that was taken on review at the Supreme Court of Appeal in Bloemfontein 2 weeks ago, and we're currently waiting for that decision to be handed down. In 2012, there was a Brazil dumping application, and the Minister of Trade and Industry had concerns relating to that. He didn't put a dumping duty in place, but we had an opportunity to present to the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry at that time, and they found that there were flaws and errors in terms of certain of ITAC considerations, and they recommended that there should be a joint sitting of Department of Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee and Economic Development Portfolio Committee to allow ITAC to explain certain of the shortcomings which had come through. Unfortunately, to date, that hasn't happened, but it may be opportune for this Portfolio Committee to take into account certain of the things which have happened in the past and possibly to suggest that that comes into play. At the moment, there's a duty review which has resulted in our meeting here today on non-EU chicken, and that we are waiting, as we heard earlier, and we believe an imminent announcement to be made, and we're hoping that that decision will be that there will be no increase in duty, as we believe the current levels of duty protection are adequate. We understand that there's a dumping duty application sitting with ITAC at the moment against Holland and others, and we're waiting to hear if that is going to be initiated soon. And we know that there have been advances by the local chicken industry to the Department of Agriculture to increase the SPS, the sanitary and phytosanitary, so therefore non-tariff barriers in terms of imported chicken, and we believe that is underhand. We have put out our hand, and we put it out again here today to say we will work together with local industry for equivalency across all levels. The impact of the current tariffs on competition and competitiveness. The large producers are squeezing out all competition, and that's local and imported. New entrants to the industry find it very difficult to come into play, as the industry is controlled by a number of very large, vertically integrated local participants. And these participants limit access to genetic material, feed, and distribution channels. And we refer you again to Annexure 8, which is the competition issues. We believe that by limiting import competition, choice of the consumer will be limited, and there's currently an equilibrium between local supply and import, which is good for competition. Currently, local is not forced to become globally competitive because they have enough protection and they are looking to maintain that protective status. If, or the implications of the local industry tariff increase, application and imports, the impact of this application, if approved, will have a limiting effect on total imports. In the short term, there will be diversion to the EU countries in terms of imports, not for all products, but already 55% of all chicken imports into South Africa come from the EU. Only 29% come from Brazil. Part 2, the status of poultry tariffs in South Africa, implications on the local industry, and implications on consumers. We'll deal with this in two parts, if there's no change in duties, and also if SAFA granted their wish. The status of the poultry tariffs in South Africa. We believe that ITAC has made a decision at the meeting on the 9th of July 2013. We expect this decision has been forwarded to the Minister of Trade and Industry, which was confirmed by yourself earlier. And we're surprised at this rush job, because the Minister determined of Trade and Industry that the local poultry industry was in distress, and the investigation period was limited to 4 months. Now, that 4 month period was up, and as we say, the decision was taken, we believe, on the 9th of July. We are sitting now on the 10th of September, 2 months later, and still no decision has been gazetted. So for an investigation which had to be completed in such a short period of time, the decision is still outstanding, and at the end of the day, this is normal investigation periods can last up to 8 to 10 months. So this was definitely a rush job, and we believe that it is long outstanding whatever decision needs to take place. And the reason is importers are living week to week. Basically, importers are waiting for the tariff announcement. And speculation is now causing real market disturbance, because the longer that it takes for a decision to be made, the more participants in the industry are speculating, and that will cause market disturbances which affects normal importers and the local industry. In terms of the decision on duties currently, the currency has already given, over since the investigation period, a 25% protection or added protection level. So over and above the duty increases, already there's a currency weakening, which has given protection to the local industry, and the protection afforded by the currency weakening against European or euro-denominated imports is in the region of 30%. So what we're saying, if there's no change in duties, which is what we hope the minister will find, SAPA will be forced to become globally competitive. They will have to relook their flawed business model, and I'll touch on that again shortly. They'll have to balance the carcass, and they would have to look at exports. Currently, the exports are absolutely minimal. The consumer, in this instance, will be in the best position for both price and choice. If SAPA are granted their wish, access to food will be limited, affordability of food will be negatively affected, there will be price increases, quality levels will reduce, choice of the consumer will be limited, jobs will be negatively affected, global competitiveness will not be necessary for the local industry, consumers will pay for a poor business model, and in the event of a disease outbreak, the South African food security will be threatened. Implications of the local industry tariff increase application on imports. The impact of this application, if approved, will have a limiting effect on total imports. Imports from non-EU countries will be effectively stopped, and there will be an element of diversion to EU products. So the net effect will be rising food prices, limited choice, and lessened food security. We believe that will be very bad for consumer and for South Africa. The only beneficiaries of this would be a concentrated few local, vertically integrated chicken producers. So if we now move on to part three and the way forward. We say we've got to build in South Africa a globally competitive industry. We need to look at this, access export markets, manage input costs. For argument's sake, there's a nested duty, Honourable Chairperson, on soya cake imports. And that's 50% of South Africa's soya cake, which is for animal feed, is imported from other countries, and there's a 6% duty on that. We should be looking at giving rebates on those kind of input costs to allow the local industry to get more competitive rather than forcing the consumer to pay for these types of issues. We should be looking at balancing the carcass. When we talk about balancing the carcass, and this is probably where the biggest floor currently stands in the South African producers' hands, is that we sell 70% of our chicken in South Africa in frozen IQF packs. In those packs, we've got highly brined chicken, and all parts are put into those packs, including the breast. Worldwide competitive chicken industries sell each part of the chicken for the best possible value. In South Africa, we put all the parts into the same frozen pack, and we sell all parts at an equal value. We should be extracting those breasts and adding value to those. We should be growing bigger birds because bigger birds will give us a better overall yield. It doesn't suit the industry currently to do that, but if we want to become globally competitive and we want to be able to maximize the returns for the local industry and we want to be able to make sure that there's a long-term growth in our chicken industry in South Africa, we need to look at all of these issues together to ensure that we are globally competitive and that we are maximizing the yield from every chicken grown. So in terms of where we want to go here, solutions on the way forward, we requested the Minister of Trade and Industry to mediate between the affected parties and we were not granted that. We have heard that there's been discussions between the Department of Trade and Industry and the Department of Agriculture in terms of a chicken industry development plan. AMI has been excluded from those discussions to date. We believe we are an affected party. We believe we have a role to play, and we would request this portfolio committee to request Department of Agriculture to include us in those debates and in those discussions because, as I say, we believe we have a role to play in terms of international trade for the future. we believe that this portfolio committee should bring together an interdepartmental discussion for the portfolio committees of trade and industry, economic development, DAF, possibly even health, because brining with the high salt levels in chicken and in brine creates issues relating to human health. We have requested the Competition Commission to perform a full market inquiry, and we hope that this will result in a comprehensive value chain evaluation from the genetic line through feed, medicines, brining, distribution, marketing, and management and ownership, including the imports' role in this complex industry. We believe imports have a role and therefore need to be reviewed as part of the total chicken business in South Africa. And then, most importantly probably, because of the uncertainty around the brining limits, DAF needs to finalize and enforce the new brining limits. They currently have proposed 4%, and AMI supports Department of Agriculture in that 4% limit. Honourable Chairman, thank you very much. I'm sure that you've had enough of hearing from me today, so I'll stop my clucking. Thank you for this opportunity, and we look forward to hearing the other presentations.
I want to believe that we're not going to follow Mr. Saudi's example. He took literally 30 minutes in his presentation. So the intention is to have a short, swift, to the point presentation with key salient points. We do have the presentations with us. We certainly shall refer to the presentation themselves. If there is anything that is quite critical, that shall not have been covered by any presentation. So if you can reduce that 30 minutes to 15 minutes. I know, you know, those that start first, they are usually the culprits, and they benefit most.
Honorable Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, fellow presenters, honored guests, I would want to thank you for this opportunity to tell the South African Poultry Association story to you. These opportunities, I must say, are very hard to come by, and I would want to thank you for that. Be that as it may, I feel quite uncomfortable, to be honest, to have been allocated 15 minutes as opposed to 30 minutes that was allocated to Amy. But I will try as much as possible, Chair, to be as succinct as possible. The overview of the SAPA story will be as follows, Chair. I will tell you of the importance of the local poultry industry.
Chairperson? Hmm. I'm sorry, I don't want to take some of your time. I think we must give them enough time, Chair. I just wanted to ask them to introduce themselves so that Auckland knows the people from South Africa.
They know that they are going to do that.
That was an omission on my part, Chair.
You know that you're going to do that.
I'm definitely going to be doing that. My name is Saul Motsepe. I am the senior executive with South African Poultry Association. I am with Tumi Mukwene on my right and Scott Pittman and Kevin Lovell as well as Chris Kete. All these are the representatives of SAPA coming all the way from Pretoria for 15 minutes. We are trying to cut on time. That's why I did not even give the titles. But all in all, Kevin Lovell is the CEO of South African Poultry Association. I would want to think that he is more important than all of us here. What I've said, Chairperson, is that I will tell you of the importance of the local poultry industry in South Africa and how dumped imports from the developed world have devastated this industry. Honorable Chair, I will also tell you of how the Association of Meat Importers and Exports has won the media battle over SAPA, but how the real war for food security and jobs still remain. I will also tell you how countries worldwide protect their industries in many ways, as well as contrary to what Amy has said in the media, I'm also going to tell you how South Africa is an efficient producer of chicken. I also need to indulge you, Chair, on the imports, how the imports contain significant risks, and thereafter I will allow our CEO to tell you on brining, which has been on the people's lips for quite some time. I know that Amy have given an indication of how bad brining is, but we also have our story to tell on this. The CEO will also tell you on the costs of exploding on a local crisis, and my colleague on the right, that is to me, will also make sure that he tells you on how SAPA is stepping up transformation. Chair, the local poultry industry is vital to South Africa for the following reasons. Poultry is more than 65% of South African consumed animal protein and is the biggest grocery category in the country. It is the single largest part of agriculture in the country, almost the quarter of the agricultural GDP, and it is the second biggest user of local maize and a major user of soya beans. It is core indeed to the South Africa's food security, and animal products in general represent the major growth area for local agriculture. This industry, Chair, employs 50,000 people directly in comparison to the meager 10,000 people that Amy referred to earlier, and 60,000 indirectly plus 18,000 in the grain industry. That clearly shows you, Chair, that we are the backbone of the industry employment in the country. And poultry meat generates 30 billion rand in local farm gate revenue and about 1 billion in corporate taxes in a normal year. That excludes all the VAT generated in the value chain. This should tell you that if this industry collapses, Chair, 30 billion rands in foreign exchange will be lost to South Africa to imports. And this is what I would want to believe that is what EMI and other organizations out there are willing to see. The poultry industry, Chair, is devastated by dumped imports.
I was just wondering whether it would really be okay for us to continue in that fashion. Granted, you have your issues, and you have been spelling those issues out in the public domain. You want to bring that fight here. I don't think it will take us anywhere. I don't know how you want to do it, but you want to avoid that as well. We because here what we are of interest is for us to be able to say at the end how best we take this process forward in the best interest of the country and its people. So we are not going to be interested in your little fines. I think that's generally how I take it. Members, we are fine with that. Is that okay? Because from time to time, you know, our Amy's, you know, and Amy is going to react, and you know, I don't think it will really take us anywhere.
Yes, Chair, I think let's give all these people a chance. You know why I want us to give us a chance? It's good what we are saying. We are going to come to this attitude. I think this is the part that is very critical that we are addressing. Let's give them, as they come and do this thing in front of all of us, it's in the context that all these people are supposed to be served in South Africa. I can see this cat and mouse type of an arrangement. I think that's the part first we should start with. And I agree with you. Let's leave them. Let them play now. Will come a time when we tell them where to stop and what we're supposed to do. Then let's give them an opportunity. I have something to say about it. Because Amy did it, they are doing it. Meaning there's a problem here, fundamentally, that we should address in terms of relations of these people.
Captain Moss?
Thank you very much. I have to be honest, we felt the punches in the first presentation. I was not even starting at all to throw the punches back. But I will definitely refrain from doing that after your advice. But as it is, Chair, the industry is in a crisis. The latest published company audited results show that, and even the confirmation by the Minister of DTI, Mr. Rob Davies, that the industry is in a crisis, is reflected in the results that we currently have. For example, Astral has lost about 180% in the results to March. Country Bet Holding South Africa has lost 150 in their results to June. Rainbow Chicken South Africa has lost 103 in their results to June. And Agri South Africa Poultry have lost a staggering 229 million rands in their results to June. As if that is not enough, Chair, jobs are being lost and businesses are downscaling or closing. For example, Darling, Agile, Berwin, Sangiro are gone as we speak, and some of them are in the business rescue model. This is happening for two reasons, Chair. It is happening solely because of the exporters and the importers. Traditionally, exporters like Brazil, Argentina, Thailand continue to grow while a global recession is underway. And traditional importers like Russia and China are becoming self-sufficient due to food security concerns. And therefore, our continent, Africa, has become a greater target for the developed world's unwanted surpluses, which some importers are most willing to accept.
And what is happening with this graph that we see on the screen shows that feed costs, which are now, I'm sorry, I think I'm on the wrong slide. Yeah, this is what is happening. The breast meat and wings are desired by the developed world and exporters. For example, Brazil, Argentina, and the European countries in particular, they make their money out of this portion. And the red arrow shows that the red quarters are not desired, and they are sold for whatever price they can get, from 6 rand per kilo to 16 rand per kilogram over the last year. 8 years since South Africa was born in second quarter. For example, in the last 2 years, the imports have doubled, and there is an extra 10,000 rand per month per ton. And the same tonnage is what Rainbow sells to retail per month. From the 2011 price, the EU will pick up that it was taking on 45%, and the latest 2013 statistics show that the EU has dramatically hit the 74% mark. That shows that there's been a remarkable decrease in imports from Brazil, Argentina, and Canada, while the EU is benefiting on the other hand, and other importers are also benefiting locally. Clearly, the EU is a major problem with respect to dump ball in chicken feed. And that is confirmed by the report that we have heard from South Africa. Deep cuts, as we speak, they are now sitting at 60% plus of chicken companies' total cost, and have gone up by 20% for 2 years in a row. And yet, prices are still lower than 2 years ago. The import explosion has therefore caused an imbalance in supply and demand, which has suppressed prices and the ability to recover fish, as well as the electricity and energy costs. Then, going back to the Desert North side, but I'm not going to dwell that much on it, but I have to state what affects. I'm saying this because the meat importing industry employs only a few thousand people. They have quoted 10,000 in their presentation. We still have to verify that. All other jobs referred to by them are in logistics and selling, and that would be retained if the important volume is replaced by local production. Food security, on the other hand, has become one of the world's primary agricultural drives. Chicken imported today at very low prices, they will become unavailable or very expensive tomorrow if exporters find countries prepared to pay more for them. Chair, we have indicated and want to emphasize that there are 110,000 jobs that are at risk, directly and indirectly. And this excludes the grain farming industry and farmers. And something needs to be done to make sure that this is a complete stop. After people, chicken farming consumes the most maize and soya in South Africa as a submission area. And this industry would likely collapse if poultry does, and there is not enough infrastructure export South Africa trade production. South African manufacturers' profits go into three things. We pay taxes, we pay dividends to institutional shareholders such as the PIC, where the majority of the pensions of the South African currency sit, and the rest is fully reinvested into the South African poultry industry. Does not go into someone else's back pocket. The importer's contribution to the above share is very minimal. As indicated in the opening introduction, the countries worldwide protect their industries in many ways for food security and job raising. The world trade in agriculture is highly distorted, that has to be said. Countries rely on two areas, which are trade measures, which we are here for, and the sanitary and phytosanitary barriers. For example, the trade measures. Our tariffs are low by one standard, we have to confess. For example, tariffs per kilogram for bone cuts. In South Africa, we are sitting at 2.20, and the European Union, look at the figure, it's 506. Canada, plus minus 38 rand. Switzerland, plus minus 10 rand, and developing countries such as Indonesia, Egypt, India, Russia are sitting at 3 rand, 5 rand, 16 rand, 5 rand, etc. In the FPS, which we call sanitary and partial sanitary barriers, a few examples of FPS currently exist in Brazil, China, Russia, and all those countries that we have indicated there. Brazil does not approve any of our abattoirs for export. China, as all of you know, have withdrawn all the approvals on abattoirs. And any country that wants to do business with them, they have to reapply. The same goes for Russia, which has restricted import by 50%, 10% last year, and it comes from the World Trade Organization report. The European Union does not have any South African abattoirs for export. They have also banned all poultry because of what they call ostrich flu in our country. Australia and New Zealand, all of them have banned all the poultry imports coming from South Africa. And coming to our neighbors, Namibia and Botswana, Zimbabwe, Namibia and recently introduced a small quota. The same goes for Botswana and Mozambique, which require permits, but they naturally do not issue none, even if you can apply. Zimbabwe, on the other hand, does not allow any imports from South Africa yet. Nigeria and Kenya have all closed all the borders to poultry imports because they would want to prioritize their own industry. Here it is, while it is this barrier as a net promoter way of restricting trade. Going back to what I said earlier, the South African chicken, I have to put it forward that we are slightly behind Brazil, but just behind the United States of America. That graph there shows that with the performance efficiency factor, we are sitting at 301 against 314 of Brazil. And 280 of the United States of America. The same goes for, unfortunately, we are disadvantaged on costs of grain due to logistics, subsidies, and territorialities with grain exporters. This is out of control. This is out of our industry control. But we have to mention that South African manufacturers have had a more than doubling cost of electricity in 4 years, not experienced by any of our importers. The risk that we are facing, Chairperson, we have 1,200 abattoirs that are approved for export to South Africa. None of these have been personally visited by officials from the North Africa, from the Department of Agriculture and Forestry. South African abattoirs the South African abattoirs are constantly overseen by the state fair. There is thus a huge food safety and health disparity between local and imported chicken. We have to submit that SAPA has sampled and independently tested about 80 samples of imported chicken pieces in the last 8 months. And what we have picked up is that there are unacceptable contamination. For example, we have what we call E. coli 0157, which is known to be a killer. Once you touch it, you are gone. And it's sitting at 5%. That is a staggering figure, Mr. Chen. And that surely needs to be addressed. The same goes for the Listeria and Listeria monocytogenes. That is sitting at 28.4% respectively. Other infectious bronchitis virus are sitting at 31%, Salmonella at 5%, TBC at 16%, and multi-residue at 10%. The results reported relate only to the samples that have been tested. And this surely, if we have an efficient and effective but we also have our authority test.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairman and committee members. I'm going to just speak quite quickly on Ryan, because it's important that we present our side of the story. And it's important to note that brining is an international practice for many meat products. In fact, it comes from the bacon industry. That's where it was invented. And it was modified to be used for chicken. It's not a chicken thing. It is an international thing. It's not universal. There are some countries that don't do it, but it is international. In fact, all the machines to do it come from Europe, by the way, which are in South Africa. When a chicken is frozen, or any animal or any plant, that the moisture, the cell walls burst and the moisture leaks out. Brine is not water. If you add water to a chicken, it has no effect. Brine is a special solution which adds moisture back. It's very technical and we don't have time to explain, but if anybody wants to ask that question, I can explain in physiological detail how it works. The quick service restaurant, the global ones like KFC or Yum is the proper company name, it's an international standard. It's all around the world. Locally, Chicken Lick and Nando's, all those sort of people. It's necessary to give the quality that people want. When you buy through a lemon and herb or your peri-peri, the reason it tastes so good is because it's been injected with the stuff to the brain. Otherwise, it wouldn't taste like that. It's a good, that's why I hope people buy it, particularly chickens as well, by the way. So we've done blind tests. We hired auditors, BDO, and they sampled both the target group of consumers, those who buy frozen products, and the non-target group of consumers, those who buy fresh products. And we asked them blind, the people who cooked the food, the people who ate the food, nobody knew what they were eating. And it didn't matter which the group was. They all came up and said local brine chicken is what they want to use. It's a high-quality product. The quality is what people want. And what people want is local brine products. And we can show that it's safe. It has to be safe by law. The Department of Health regulates safety. Salt is a curved ball in sporting terms. Brine chicken has less than half the salt in bread. It has less than a third of the salt in all bran fats, for those of you who like the all bran fats. So in terms of World Health Organization, it's what's called a medium salt product. It's not an issue. We know that we need to cap brining on portions. For many years, there's been a regulation which caps brining on whole goods, but there's never been one on portions. Portions are our biggest market, and so we support this. In fact, we've been trying to get this to happen for quite some time. So we've actually submitted an industry code of practice, which we want government to look at. The practical problem that government has, there is no scientific technique to measure any regulation they might make. So the only way to what it's to work is for industry and government to work together so we can actually monitor in plant. But there is no scientific test that you can buy at the supermarket and see what's in it. That's a practical problem. We'd really like to work with that on a cap level, a moisture cap level, that all stakeholders find acceptable. And as you can see from Kentucky, they talk of 15% to 20%. I'm not going to deal with the last point because Amy in their own presentation acknowledged that they themselves brine. The difference is they rework when they brine. In other words, they store frozen product brine as free as a game, and we brine with raw products or unfrozen products. I may move on to the next slide, that's all. It's probably easier to just look at your tables. And I'll explain what this slide is trying to show. That in law, meat is muscle, blood, bone, skin, blood, connective tissue. That's how it's defined in law. But that's not what people eat. What people eat is the muscle. They don't eat the bone. They don't eat the brine. So if we take the mass of these different products to make them all 1 kilogram and we subtract the brine, we subtract the bone, and we say, what does it cost you per kilogram to buy that product? And then we say, actually, if you don't actually eat meat, you consume protein, and we say, well, how much protein do you get? What you find out, and I can take this back for 5 years, that the best product for South Africans to buy, in other words, the best bang for your buck or value for money, is brine South African chicken. You get the most protein for your rand, and I can swear that under oath, if you buy brine South African chicken rather than brine unbrined anybody's chicken. It doesn't matter whether it's local or foreign. So brining is not bad for consumers. Brining is in the consumer's favor. It should be regulated because it's such an important product and it's such an important process. but it is not fair to consumers. And that's all I'd like to say on brining now. I'd like to deal with one more slide before I hand over to Ms. Krenner, and that is the effect of tariffs.
I don't want to use, Honourable Chair, this audience to talk about statistics and stuff like that. So if we accept the statistics that Amy have suggested, where they say that their imports are 10% of consumption, these tariffs only apply to the non-EU parts. In other words, these tariffs apply to 5% of local consumption by their own statistics. How can 5% of the product cause the price to go up by any dramatic amount? It's just not logically possible. We consulted with Genesis Analytics, an economics firm. They did three different scenarios for us. In those three scenarios, they said the most likely effect would be a price increase in the order of not more than 10%. In fact, I know that the NAMC, the National Agricultural Marketing Council, did their own study, and they came up with 5.6% as the possible price increase. So we've been selling, the other thing that's important to note here is in the second table that Amy gave you in their presentation, they said we'd asked for the tariffs to be increased to 82%. That's not correct. We asked for the tariffs to be increased by varying percentages, and of the main products, is actually we asked for 56%. Now, what did we do? Why did we do this? Tariffs are a policy decision. They're not actually an arithmetic exercise, but we chose to ask for tariffs that were calculated according to price suppression by PricewaterhouseCoopers, not by us. To accurately say that if these tariffs come into effect, then importers and local producers can compete at the same starting point. These are not meant to reduce the volumes of imports if importers are prepared to compete with us on the same grounds that we do. We do not want to be punitive, even though the World Trade Organization tariff framework would allow us to ask for more than what we have. This is only to be able to compete fairly. It's the whole principle behind it. That was what we asked for. Now, we're quite comfortable that PricewaterhouseCoopers have calculated the sums right. Did they use the right information to do that? That's a debate that an expert body like ITAC has to deal with, and we obviously can't comment because we don't know how they've interpreted the information we've given to them. So we're, as much as Amy are in the dark, we are in the dark. And unfortunately, these tariffs won't affect the bulk of the bone-in imports, which, as Sol explained to you, is what's left over from the developed world's markets.
I must say, Kevin, that you are
finished
beyond 30 minutes. More than the 15 minutes earlier.
Honourable Chair, I'm handing over to Ms. Krenner now. Thank you.
I hear you saying somebody else is still to talk, but I am mentioning the fact that you are beyond 30 minutes.
Must apologise then, Honourable Chair.
Honourable Chair, thank you for the time, and also thank you for the portfolio committee giving us this opportunity. I must say that I'm a poultry farmer. I farm on full-time basis. In the western side of
the you see, those kinds of introductions, they don't assist us.
Okay.
And the kind of reaction to Amy also does not assist us. If you were to be to the point of what you believe in, what you want to hear,
yes,
what SAPA is saying or doing, that's all what we're keen on.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
We're not interested in your farming background. Equally important, there's no doubt. But for purpose of time, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The point that we mainly want to put across is that we as developing poultry farmers are equally struggling as well due to the imports. And we realize that the main cause is due to the imbalance in the supply and demand, which has suppressed the prices and the ability of us as developing farmers to recover feed and other energy costs. We have also realized that our frustration also comes from the need for government as well to empower us as developing farmers, that the programs that they've put in place, such as CASP, which is a comprehensive agricultural support program, get frustrated because of, you know, we are not able to get the return on the investment that government is putting in this, in our farming enterprises.
and there is lack of, there is no sustainability that is able to be derived by us as developing farmers due to the imports. SAPA has also moved forward in terms of transformation, Chair, and we have pushed as one of the units within SAPA called the DPFO, Developing Poultry Farmers, to ensure that the members of the National Executive Committee become part of the three major components of SAPA. And that is assisting us so that we can ensure that there is transformation that is able to benefit us as developing farmers. I must say, Chair, that also the industry has reacted positively as referred to the recent congress that we had, that we were able to push the industry to agree that there is a need for some of the farms that are made, some of the farms from the industry to be made available for the developing poultry farmers. This is critical in order to reverse the injustice that we know took place in this country. Mainly the point, Chair, is that the imports are not assisting the progression that we need as a country. And we see that the efforts also that are coming from AMI, they are not able to take us forward in the sense that we are not getting the prices that are able to empower us and even sustain the farming enterprises that we are involved in. We have developed, Chair, together with other departments such as Rural Development, DAF, National Poultry Strategy, which is going to put more direction towards the transformation of this industry that we are in. I must say that also at SAPA we are keen to step up the pace of this with other key government decision makers, and we need the momentum from government to assist us in getting that progress forward.
Chair, I'm taking over for 2 seconds. We ask and we plead actually with the portfolio committee to help us by persuading all ministries and sector departments to help enforce SPS phytosanitary measures, act more aggressively against illegal imports and exports, ensure compliance at all ports of entry, especially Durban and even Cape Town, treat SAPA as partners with regular communication and meetings and not as enemies, as some departments are doing, open the doors of engagement with government, be candid and transparent when dealing with us for the betterment of long-term good relationships, and we also plead with you to help us to deal with high input costs, the regulatory framework, as well as improving the food security of South Africa. Thank you, Chair. And go. Thank you.
You see the language you use equally can literally cancel any good intention. You know, you're talking here about, you know, you being treated as enemies by government. And you're equally saying government must help you. It cancels everything. But I'm sure we'll learn as time goes as to how best we do some of the things. I know your frustrations. You have displayed it quite you know, successfully. All the frustrations. But we want to find each other so that we're able to move forward whilst Competition Commission is setting itself up. You know, just a little comment. I'm sure it applies equally to Emmy. Because we want to find a solution here. Yes, we are interested in some of the issues that tear you guys apart. But equally important it is to find that solution. We are parliament, an extension of parliament. Parliament being a body of public representatives. You are part of that public representative constituency. You are our constituency. Precisely because you're part of the public, we are public representatives ourselves here. So we listen to literally everybody. But at the end, we should be able to say we are heading somewhere forward. Competition Commission?
Yeah. I'm, in the interest of time, I'm ready to start even though those slides are not ready. Should I just go ahead?
We do have the hard copies.
Yeah.
I'm sure we shall be referring to those.
Okay. Thank you very much. My name is Shan Ramburith. I'm the Competition Commissioner, and with me today is Pamela Halser, who is a researcher at the Commission who's worked in research in the poultry industry, amongst other things. Chair, thank you very much for inviting me to share the experiences of the Competition Commission to this forum. Unfortunately, the kind of nature of this has changed a bit, so I'm going to be very brief around some of these issues because it would be repetitive. Some of them have been raised already by the previous two presentations. Chair, as you may be aware, the South African Competition Commission has prioritized its enforcement activity in a number of markets that we felt were important, and amongst them are food markets. So you'll notice that a lot of our cases have dealt with bread and the milling industry, and one of our priority sectors in the food market has indeed been the poultry sector, for all the reasons that have already come out in the course of this discussion. The fact that poultry is a major source of protein for our population, and making that available and easily accessible to people is important. And what that means is that the kind of, you know, our take on what's happening here is necessarily, and I must say unashamedly, have to be a kind of pro-consumer stance. In other words, what the Commission does, what informs what it does, is a pro-consumer stance. It's something that we do in order to ultimately benefit consumers. So I'm declaring that it might well be the bias that I will have in my presentation. Chair, if you look at the major players if you look at the structure of this industry, you'll find that there are relatively few players. There are five major players in this market. In the language of competition policy and competition law, this is called an oligopoly, where there's few players, and the structure of this market is also characterized by vertical integration. In other words, one firm has ownership at different levels of the market, and this kind of market structure lends itself to a lot of anti-competitive behavior. It's in the very structure of the market that anti-competitive behavior, it incentivizes anti-competitive behavior by the different firms, the oligopoly and the vertical integration. The Competition Commission has undertaken a number of investigations in different aspects of this value chain. In 2009, we did a scoping study where we looked at where the problems might be, and we wanted to look then in more detail at the breeding stock and broiler markets and the feed markets and the ultimate consumer product markets. And what came out in the report, I'm not going to go into each of the investigations and the merits and demerits of it, but what we found, the kinds of anti-competitive behavior we found in this market is there was possible market allocation between the different players. Market allocation means the different players get together and they say, you take that geographical area and I'll take this geographical area, or market allocation could occur through products. You will sell, you will concentrate on selling product A, and I will concentrate on product B. And we found particularly in the Western Cape region there was some evidence of market allocation here. The other major issue, competition issue in a market like this is exclusive supply agreements. This is where if I'm supplying a firm, that firm could only be supplied by me and not seek supply from any of my competitors. That behavior is fundamentally anti-competitive as well. In this particular market, it occurred in terms of the breeding stock with contract growers. So the breeding stock, if you bought a particular breeding stock from somebody, you weren't allowed to buy their competitor's breeding stock. The third kind of anti-competitive behavior that is likely in this kind of market is where there's tying, what we call tying. In other words, if you buy one product A from me, you must also buy product B, or I'm not going to sell you A. And so here we found that in this context, if I sold you day-old chicks, you also had to buy the feed from me, and you couldn't buy the feed from another supplier. And the third and perhaps most important kind of anti-competitive behavior in this market is information exchange, which is in a number of instances, and I'm not referring specifically to this market in poultry, but in a whole range of different markets, information exchange is often facilitated by industry associations. So industry associations will collect information from all their members and make that information then available again to all their members. And so all their members will know what their competitors' prices are, what their competitors' volumes are, and this is kind of fundamentally anti-competitive because it enables coordination, it enables price setting, and it prevents parties from independently being competitive. In other words, you know, to make the point more starkly, often industry associations perform the function of the secretariat for the cartel, basically. They are the people who exchange information so that there's coordination between the different players in an industry, which could lead to very, very anti-competitive outcomes. Chair, the next point to make is in a graph, and this has been presented by the previous two speakers using different data in different forms. So, but the main point that's coming, this particular picture is about our trade balances. In other words, it kind of tells us whether we net export importers or net exporters in relation to different regions. And you'll see that it's only in relation to the rest of Africa that we are net exporters, and there too very slightly. You'll see it's, you know, that graph goes very slightly above the zero. In relation to the other parts of the world, we are net importers. But the big point here that has been made previously is that you'll see that in recent times, there's not a dramatic increase of imports from South America. In fact, the dramatic increase is from Europe, and that point has been made by the previous two speakers quite eloquently. I think the importance of that point, though, is that if you're going to raise tariffs, and the tariffs can't certainly apply to Europe because we've got unless I'm wrong, and that's something we need to clarify, we've got a free trade agreement with Europe. If our major imports are from Europe and we're putting on tariffs, we're only affecting a very small part of the import market in the end. I think the previous speaker said 5% of total chicken consumptions would be subject to these tariffs. But he argued, well, if that the argument made by the previous speaker is that if it's only 5%, it's not going to affect prices. I think the other discussion that needs to be had here is that if it's only 5%, why do we need it at all? I mean, I think that his argument around it's not going to have an effect on prices can be turned the other way around, and that question can be comfortably asked as well. But I think these are the kind of raw data and statistics, and it's important to look at that and what that means. Okay, so the next slide is just kind of repeating what I've just said in terms of the picture I've put up. The next slide is also some kind of empirical information that we've got in the research we're doing with other African countries around trade flows between different African countries. And here you'll see, and I think this point has been made in other ways by other speakers, is that if you're looking at the margins, operating profits as a percentage of turnover for different firms, which we've mentioned, and we got this from their annual reports. This is publicly available information. You will see that indeed, in the recent past, margins have come down. Margins have dropped. Okay? I think very interesting in this graph, you'll see that following a merger between Astral and Natchix in 2002, now mergers means high levels of concentration, and you'll see that when this merger occurred, margins of the entire industry went up, okay, which would indicate to us that merger resulted in a more anti-competitive situation. Because people were making more profits. You'll see that when a new breed was introduced by Country Bird, at the point in that graph, you'll see that margins dropped. And the new breed means more competition, and so more competition means margins are dropping and less profits. So the question here is how do we explain this drop in margins? What has resulted in it? What is the cause of it? Well, it could be that there were high levels of competition. Either, you know, that Country Bird example would be one instance, one factor. But it could be there's high levels of competition because there's more imports. Because in that very same period, imports also increased. It could be that there were other factors. There were input costs went up in that period, and therefore margins dropped. So, I mean, the data we have is that margins did indeed drop, but one could have different takes around analyzing why that occurred, and there could be different explanations around that. I think that what's important here for us, a general point, is that How do we react to this? Is this a crisis in the industry because margins have dropped? Should we be addressing this crisis? You know, what's the problem here? Generally, there's kind of two broad approaches one could take here. One could say, well, there is a problem, there's a crisis in this industry, let's protect them. Let's protect them from external competition, and that would make the argument for raising tariffs. There could be an altogether different response that says, look, in order to protect consumers, or in order to advantage consumers, let's allow these products to come in, and those products coming in will force, this is a point made by the previous speaker, will force our local industry to become more competitive, to rise to the challenge and become more competitive because they're now competing with imported products. And while in the short term there might be a problem, in the longer term we'll have a far more competitive industry in South Africa. And those are kind of two broad, in theory, the kinds of responses that can have. A competition authority, of course, would be more partial to a response that increases consumer welfare. In other words, a response that makes products cheaper for the end consumer. To protect an industry is, in the first instance, to be more concerned about producer welfare. Although, of course, there are kind of persuasive arguments that says in In seeing to producer welfare, you will be creating more jobs, you will be, you know, there are legitimate reasons, there may well be legitimate reasons to protect consumer welfare, to, I beg your pardon, to protect producer welfare and to advance producer welfare, and that needs to be very carefully considered, and some of those arguments have already been made, and I won't repeat them. But they have to do with kind of job creation, they have to do with food security. Of course, if you kind of, if you destroy the capacity in this industry now, that will affect food security in the long term, because it's going to be very hard to rebuild that capacity at a later period of time. So that's a very careful policy stance that needs to be taken. I think that, you know, the point around all of these debates and arguments is that there has to be some level of kind of real empirical evidence backing them up, because there is often a tendency for these arguments to be made in the abstract and in theory. So just to kind of summarize, yeah, I'm doing very well. I've taken 5 minutes, and I've only got 2 more minutes to go. Just to summarize, our points is that import tariffs will certainly stifle competition from imports in the South African market, and in, firstly. Secondly, imports might force domestic producers to compete, resulting ultimately in the medium to long term with lower prices for consumers and greater product choices. Increasing import tariffs may actually mean that you keep going inefficient firms, and this will be at the expense of consumers. In other words, firms that will ultimately be inefficient and pass on that inefficiency to their consumers in terms of higher prices. There will be less product choice and higher prices, and consumers will be denied the competition of the benefits of import competition. So bottom line, our points are that in a vertically integrated sector with high barriers to entry, the structure of this market is conducive to anti-competitive behavior. The Commission's investigations found that imports were competitive constraints. In other words, this is an important point, because should tariffs go up, our analysis of this market will change. In other words, you know, we made an analysis of the level of competition in this market given a particular level of tariffs. And our assumption was that that imports would still have a competitive constraint on this market. But should those tariffs go up, we can no longer make that assumption, and our analysis of the entire market is then going to change. It's true that margins have decreased in this period, but we need to have some perspective on why that has occurred. We need to take into account input costs that may have increased, and we need to understand exactly what has resulted in that, and that tariffs, I think, will ultimately result in higher prices for consumers, and that is our bottom line in terms of our analysis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Those are the presentations, members. I guess we all wanted to hear. The bottom line there, all of these presentations that they talk to, they talk to food security and they talk to food safety. I think those two, they cut across. You're listening very well to all what has been said by the three presenters. You can switch off your mic. Can we attend to the aircon? I saw some people getting or feeling cold. It's not cold. I'm saying some people. That's why I was using some of us. Anyway, members, that is the, I saw your hand, Mr. Banga, and Mrs. Steyn, Mr. Van Dalen, Mr. Abram, that was it. Mama Parisa. In that order?
Yeah. Chairperson, the first thing I want to address very quickly is that we need an apology from this gentleman for the behavior that they have shown in this meeting. One, in particular from yourself, that this is the house of the people of South Africa. We take our business very seriously, both the institutions. We are not here to fight. We are here to resolve issues on behalf of the people of South Africa. The conduct shown here shows disregard of this house. This is a serious house. We speak on behalf of the people of South Africa. I think those responsible CEOs will need a formal apology. What you are doing there outside in the media, you must not do it here. I think that the other thing, I think it was important for these departments to be here, Chair. Because of this, because I think there's a relationship thing here that needs to be addressed. And departments, DTI and agriculture, supposed to play a key. I have never seen, I thought it was us politicians who are better, because we are from the ANC and from the other one. We agreed to talk to each other. I've never seen people who do not even want to look at each other, a business. It told me about greed, money. The problem of money that we have in this country, that people can cheat each other because of competition. But politicians are better because we talk once we come from different things. That's not the kind of message we want to send to our people and to the nation in building a winning nation. I don't think that's what we want to achieve. And I think you should be very harsh in closing in relation to this kind of a relationship we have seen. We want the National Development Plan begins to say we must work together towards achieving certain things. But I can't see between you that going towards that direction of together as partners. As people who are in the competition, this guy from the competition commission, that's as close to what we're talking about. Going together and achieving. And producing food, as the gentleman was saying, for our people. Because this is about food security. Therefore, I'm not happy. I think we need both verbal apology and a written apology from you guys for undermining this house with this kind of behavior you've shown. The second thing I want to be explained, because, sir, we must be very careful of the things we do, in particular, sir. I hope the reflection of Dr. Zwelin Khize here is not name dropping. Because you specifically see Dr. Zwelin Khize as an individual. I understand Dr. Zwelin Khize as a premier. Now, and in government department, if you bring him here, what is the intention? There's a debate going on that these tariffs are increased because certain politicians are benefiting. Are you confirming that there are certain politicians behind this and you're putting the name of Dr. Zwelin Khize? I hope it is not with his consultation that you individualize his role in relation to this, with his critical mind. I want you to look at that. I think you must. Brining. This thing of brining, amongst the people who believed that, I've said it in many speeches that I've presented here in Parliament, that brining, the imports in the main, bring in brining here in South Africa. And our belief that was told of us even the department, how healthy is this thing of brining? The Minister of Health, Minister Motswaledi, made an announcement last year about regulating, decreasing this thing of brining, because it was raising the issue of salt in this thing of brine, something that is affecting many of our people in terms of health. Now, if our local domestic chicken is the one that is more brined, and we have this one that is not brined, we have the Minister of Health that is concerned about the level of brine in our food. But what is the implication of that? What does that mean? You are saying brine, CO, is more healthy. It's better
But there's a minister for health who's saying, no, hey, look out of this crime. It's dangerous. And we must regulate and try to reduce this. What does it mean? Because yourself, as if it's a healthy diet, you can continue with it. It's so beautiful. It's nice. Many nice things, they cause us to be big as we are. But health ones, they don't. Therefore, explain that to me. The growth of the industry, the domestic industry, the guy, Chairperson from Competition Commission, I think makes very good points. You see, tell us, how are we growing? Are we able to feed South Africans without just imports? Will what you provide be able to feed and then South Africans in an affordable manner? Parliament represents affordability to represent the poor. The poor must be able to afford. But why
his name is Mr. Rambrut,
yeah?
I'm sure he feels very uncomfortable every time, you know, the guy.
Mr. Rambrut. Rambrut. Mr. Rambrut, I apologize, sir. Okay. Now, to what extent are we extending? Seemingly, we do not have footprint in terms of exports ourselves as a domestic industry. But why? Because if we're opening up markets, and the government encourages that, we're opening up markets in Africa, we're opening markets in South America, but why are we beginning to not move further for us to engage other markets? To what extent are we doing that? Is it because of this plan? My information is that Brazil doesn't, Namibia does not take our chickens because of this plan, and all these other countries, it's because of how we grind our chicken, and also because of the environment in which it's not conducive, your foot and mouth, and many other things that have been red marked both in Europe and so on. But what is it that we're doing? Lastly, Chair, I want to talk on this issue of tariffs. South Africa, in my understanding, if I'm correct, in particular of its trade agreements, is always categorized as a developed country. Part of what influences this bracketing of South Africa in this context is because it is located within a particular aspect of allocations. But internationally, what is the phenomenon that you find in terms of this? You have tried to show us in terms of developing countries, but the comparison with other developing countries was not clear to me. Is there a standard approach in terms of addressing tariffs internationally for those who are bracketed in terms of the developed countries? Lastly, I want to propose, Chair, to you that we need, because of the lack of relationship and this cat and mouse fight, it is critical, in line with what the commission is saying, that there need to be a comprehensive engagement between these partners, both with us as agriculture, as we did with the red meat industry, DTI, AGNP, and the partners, that we need to sit up together to try and find an amicable way of addressing the problems we're facing and the issues that both they have raised against each other, in order for us as a country, without an antagonistic relationship, to move forward in resolving problems rather than causing more problems. Therefore, I want to propose that as they answer that, they also respond whether or not they are willing to this kind of engagement, which as Parliament we could facilitate to address that particular aspect. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. King?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, Chair, I want to start off by saying I didn't want to speak in the beginning when you spoke about that, but I'm also concerned that the department is not here. I've read the letter from the minister, and I understand the specific issues regarding the tariffs and ITAC and everything. But I have a few questions, Chair, that I think we need to put to the department when we have a meeting with them. And my first one, Chair, is just an observation that I think many of the problems that we are sitting with has got to do that South Africa doesn't have a proper agricultural plan. The reason why I'm saying that, there was mention made by importation of soya cake that increased the price of feed and other external factors that have a massive impact on the infighting cat and mouse fight that we're having at the moment. And this cat and mouse fight, Chair, is going to have a direct impact on the consumer at the end of the day. Doesn't matter which way this fight is going to go with ITAC. I think, Chairperson, we need to call a meeting with the Department of Agriculture to establish a few things. The first thing is the current status quo of the poultry industry in South Africa. What is the department doing? I want to add on to what the gentleman from SAPA said, that we need to get to a point that we all understand. We have been on this. You know that, Chairperson, that we've been saying that South Africa's agricultural industry is playing in an unequal market. I'm not speaking about poultry. Everything. We are fighting against people that got other better rings that they are in and what better boxing gloves and things like that. So we can be as fit and as lean and mean as whatever we want to be. But if we fight in an unequal market, we are on the back foot. So I think that is the first point that I want to make on this thing, Chair. And it's a pity that it had to come to this point where I didn't actually realize, but Amy is the importers and exporters. So why the two can't speak together to export chicken is a problem. We need to solve this. And if the problem is, and I want both to explain to me why can't we export chicken. I know that there's been a graph that showed about, you know, EU has put this in place and that and whatever. That is one of our biggest challenges, I think, Jay. Just looking at that, and I like that slide that shows the chicken that's been cut off up in the first, the quarter, the back quarter and the front sections. My question to both would be, if we could export some of the more expensive cuts, would we still have a problem? Would we still have this fight to have a tariff increase? Would that solve the problem? And to be able to do that, what would we need? Both, because Amy also deals with exports. So I would like your views on that. Then, Chairperson, what percentage of those five headings on tariff increase are we actually importing into South Africa? So there was this five sections, and I would like to know what percentage do we import of each of those five sections. Another worry that I have, Chi, is on the slide that showed the percentage of, on the Amy presentation, the percentage of, that was one of the missing slides that you didn't have when you wanted to show it to us. The percentage of imports related to consumption. Unfortunately, you know, the one that we have here is quite small, so it's very difficult to look at it. But it do look as if the percentage of domestic industry has decreased on the slide, and it also looks like it if we look at the SAPA presentation and also on the Consumer Commission. There is a massive increase, it looks like it, from my point of view. So, obviously, we are increasing more poultry. That's how it looks to me. And what would the main reasons be? Would it be the fact that the feed costs went up a lot and that you don't make enough profit? I also want to find out from Sapo, you haven't said it, although you said that there was job losses. How many job losses were there already, and how many industry players might have closed? Not maybe the big companies, but that people that just couldn't make it any longer if there were already people that had to close down. Then, Chair, I'm trying to take, you know, the presentations all together and put it in brackets. The health issue with the brining. I have been concerned, and I'm still concerned, and SAPA has made a comment to say that we need to look at the imports, the compliance on Durban and Cape Town. I'm not so sure that our compliance in South Africa is great. We saw it with the whole labeling issue, Chen. I'm still not so sure that the departments of health, of agriculture, of trade and industry, and people that need to play that role really make sure that everything that we need to comply to, we are complying to. And it's all good and well for Amy to say that you guys test these things, but now we've seen Kappa telling us that they've done their own tests and found these equally and other kinds of things that's not supposed to be in there. My question would be, what is the role of the Department of Agriculture and Health? Did they do their own tests? And it must be their job. Are they doing it? That's the kind of things that we need to ask from the departments when they come here so that we know. I cannot imagine that SAPA would put up a slide here in Parliament and telling us that they've done it. And it's not true, because, you know, they could be up for some very difficult times if they put up slides in Parliament. So I'm really concerned about that specific slide sheet. Then, one other thing that I wanted to find out is this whole sanitary fights and retaliation. Amy spoke about retaliation on the black spot and canned fruit industry. We all know now that the sixth count of black spot has been found to the EU. There is a real threat that we're going to be able to lose our export markets into the EU. So what I'm trying to ask, Chairperson, I've asked it last time when we spoke about the labeling scandal. South Africa does not require an importer, I want to check this, an importer to state which is the country of origin. So for instance, our increase from Europe has went up massively in the last 2 years. Not so much dramatically from Brazil. But are we sure that Brazil is now not exporting to EU and then importing into South Africa again? That's what I want to know, because as far as I can remember, we were told that nothing on this, I don't know what you call it, the certificate or the label or whatever you put it on, there is no requirement by South Africa to say where is the country of origin. So if we now fight this fight to have a tariff increase on imports from Brazil, all that they have to do is to export via someone else. Is that possible? That's lastly what I want to find out on that one. And then, Chairperson, the brining limits by DAF, I think it's important that we also get a finalization on that. Outside of the fact that some brine and some doesn't and some this and some that, I think we need to finalize this as a matter of urgency. I'm not so sure if it's only lying with the Department of Agriculture, but the Department of Health definitely needs to play a massive role on that. So we need to also get clarification on that. And then just lastly, Chair, I want to find out what is the status of, of poultry meat in the world? Is there a surplus at the moment? Is there an underproduction of poultry meat? Just so that we know what it is that we are, you know, we can fight for all these things, but if poultry is in over demand or over production, we're going to fight a losing battle here. And then just for the competition commission, I also wanted to ask them just this, the country of origin, to get your opinion on that specific spot, and then on your conclusion. The whole issue that you said that vertically integrated sectors with high barriers to entry, are you going to make any recommendations to that? I think it's also important that we do know about that. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Panda?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. I have some comments. I to SAPA, I would like to say it seems like electricity, food and labor input costs have been the biggest reason why you have become globally incompetitive. And so Eskom's failures with the electricity has negatively affected you. So it sounds like you are carrying the burden of government's failing, and therefore you are fighting with the wrong people. Amy is not your enemy. It seems like that to me. You know, I'd be very hesitant and uncomfortable to embark on a protectionist regime which is as a direct result of government's failing. And therefore, I would rather argue that we fix the failures of government and then letting government off the hook, and then everybody, by trying to control the markets, as they will have other unintended consequences if we try to control the markets that we don't want to do. You talk about 110,000 jobs at risk. This is a very serious, you know, we are trying to create jobs. 110,000 jobs at risk. That is an issue we as a portfolio committee needs to tackle as a matter of urgency then, to see where we can assist in stopping that from happening and not trying to get a protectionist regime going. Then I also have the view, and it's pro-choice. You know, why not just label the important product as a product from Brazil? Or, you know, I'm a proudly South African patriotic consumer and is prepared to pay a little more for chicken if I know it's homegrown, just like I would buy chicken that is free-range and grain-fed and all the... So, you know... I would not, you know, if a chicken is battery reared or something, I would go around it. I would rather go for a free-range, grain-fed one than and know that my family would eat healthy food. So if something is brined, market brined, you know, brined chicken from South Africa or brined imported chicken frozen from Brazil, then I can have the choice to buy from whoever and whatever chicken I want to buy. If I want to pay a cheaper price for the imported one, then it would be my choice. And that is my comments. Thank you.
I did not want to disturb you, Mr. Van Dalen. You see, when we are all aware that we are in an election time. And for us to talk about, you know, government's failure on a market issue, it can be so absurd. We better have you know, another discussion outside of a discussion of this nature. If we want to engage in boxing each other politically, we can do that. We are capable. We are very fit.
I have an opinion. I'm a racist.
Yeah, but it belongs elsewhere. That's the point I'm raising. No, no, no. We can't allow that. We cannot be disorderly in a meeting here. Mr. Abram, followed by Professor Msuma.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, having listened to everything here, I am reminded by what that great Mahatma Gandhi said. And that is that stop thinking that you are weak, and then you shall be strong. That's my message to all of you. Chairperson, I think what we've heard here today is a question of, you know, who didn't do something and who did something and where something went wrong and where something didn't go wrong. The issue is, why did it happen? Why are we in the situation in which we are at the moment? And in order to determine that, Chair, the problem is that I get the impression that the lead department here should be the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, which should actually take the initiative to get all the parties involved in this particular fraternity, the chicken fraternity, which is an important fraternity, together, under one roof, to listen to everyone's problems. But I want to say, Chair, that I believe that there is room for the expansion of local production and also into the creation of new markets. There's room for that. Equally, no country is an island by itself. You are dependent on others. So you will also have imports coming in. So there's room for everyone. What we need to do, Chair, is to see that we stop working in silos. We need to have a situation where everybody comes around the table and everybody puts their problems and aspirations and future plans and everything on the table, and from there try and find a way forward. But if we don't do that, Chair, then we are going to be engaged in this sort of, tit for tat, where nobody are going to be the winners. We will all be losers. Now, Chairperson, knowing the farming environment, knowing what is at risk, we must all remember that the farmer in South Africa is subjected to at least a dozen different forms of taxes and levies and everything that go with it. And of course, these days also, toll fees that are increasing, new toll roads being created. These are all forms of levies and taxes. You take the price of fuel, it's another form of a tax that increase, which eats into profitability, and it also creates a product which becomes expensive for the market. Chairperson, there's one issue that was not raised here at all, and that is that, more than 2 million South Africans, and many of them poor South Africans, consume halal food. I haven't heard anything about that. And, Chairperson, I'm not asking a question. I would like you to take note of that and take it to, I hope I want to make a proposal at the end, take it to a possible forum where these things can all be dealt with, because that's also a major issue. What the young producer there spoke about, I have sympathy with him, because we have all sorts of models ostensibly created to assist developing farmers, but unfortunately they don't reach the people that it should reach. It's a problem, and that needs to be addressed at a forum where you should have agriculture as the lead department, you should have rural development there, because they want to develop the rural areas of the country, and chicken production is one of the ways of doing it. You want to increase this 110,000 jobs to much more. You need to have DGI. I don't know what's the role of economic development, but if they want to economically develop the country, they should be at the party. You need Department of Health there, Chairperson, and possibly some other state agencies. Now, Chairperson, the other problem that we have here is that an announcement is imminent. And I want to tell Mr. Rambert that I have immense respect for the Competition Commission. But as he said it himself, their bias, with which I agree, is in favor of protecting the consumer, which is very important too. So, Chairperson, the Competition Commission should be there as well. But whatever input Mr. Rambert has made is based on the principle that the consumer needs to be protected, that he gets the best possible product for those hard-earned rands that that consumer has to spend. Now, Chairperson, unfortunately, I am what I am, and that is that I'm brutally frank about things. There's been a failure here on the part of the Department of Agriculture. I make no bones about it, no apologies about it. I would like the parliamentary liaison officer to tell the departmental officials that at a forum like this, the presence of somebody at director level was imminent, it was necessary, it should have been happening. And we must not be failed in this way. Yes, I agree with Mr. Banga and the Chairperson that this is the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. And if they consider this to be a Parliament of the Republic of South Africa, then they should respect it and be here and listen to what's going on. We have the silo approach, as I say, Chairperson, where certain things are happening in some dark corners at certain offices, and they are not sort of discussed and they don't come out into the public domain. We must remember, Chair, that the biggest threat to democracy is if we become uncritical. We need to point out where the shortcomings are so that we can make timeous interventions to put them right. Chairperson, there's a lot that can be said. I mean, we hear on the one side 538 million liters of brine was injected last year. We hear on the other side that brine is the best stimulant to create protein. That's what I understand. Now, you see, there are all these things, Chairperson, and they cannot be resolved at a meeting like this one. Because the role players are not here. You need to have them all here. Or at a place. When we hear, Chairperson, that there is a chicken industry development plan, I want to be very honest. In 4.5 years, I did not hear of it at this committee. Is the Department of Agriculture involved in it? I take it they should be. I'm not aware of it. Then, Chairperson, we hear that the industry is in crisis. Now, it's not only the business of the importation of soya cake and the tariffs that have to be paid. It is also the fact that production costs in South Africa are going up on a daily basis. And again, Chairperson, there are countries who will go out of their way to nurture their agricultural fraternity. Are we doing enough to do that? And that should be another agenda point, Chair, when such a meeting takes place. Because if you want to sustain jobs and you want to create more jobs, then there must be some or other form of intervention in the form of cushioning the rising costs that people are subjected to. You take, for example, Chair, the ostrich industry. What I have read is that, all right, sometimes I argue with people whether it's poultry or whether it's game. But you take the ostrich industry, which in the Southern Cape has brought certain things to a standstill. I mean, activity to a standstill. And every job lost, Chairperson, to an extended family, you are actually putting bread out of the mouth, taking bread out of the mouth of up to a dozen people for every job loss. So these are issues, Chairperson, that need to be addressed, and they need to also form part of our job creation initiatives. We also need to see in what way, I mean, here I noticed several African countries, and by Jove, we do our best to do everything for African countries. I may say tongue-in-cheek, if an African comes here from any other part of Africa, we take him as our brother or sister. and we give them a temporary residence permit immediately. But by job, when you go there, then you are subjected to this, the type of stuff that some countries are doing to us. So we need to, Chairperson, also escalate this to beyond the borders of South Africa so that we can become a producer that can export. And as I say, Chair, there will always be room for imports. There are certain niche markets. I conclude, Chairperson, by making the following proposal. And that is, Chair, that the Portfolio Committee should play a lead role in getting the Department of Agriculture, as we are an Agriculture Portfolio Committee, to pursue a lekhotla of all the interested parties, and that from that particular lekhotla, it's more or less in line with what Mr. Banga said. I don't want apologies from anybody. I'm a public servant. I'm a rhino, you know, thick-skinned. You can call me whatever you want. I don't mind. I'm a public servant. I'm a public, actually a people servant. Sorry, sir, I'm not a public servant. Now, Chairperson, all the entities that I have mentioned and whoever is left out, they should bring together under one roof and try and move in a direction where we look at all the problems that are faced by everyone and come out of that with a win-win situation. And Chairperson, if we have the faith, the courage, the integrity, and the perseverance, it is not impossible.
Yes.
That word does not exist in my dictionary. We as a country have actually gone through crisis. And those of us that were of a darker skin, even greater crisis. Nobody thought that one day we would be sitting in these chambers. Likewise, Chair, nobody must think that these problems are insurmountable. But I want to caution, Chair, that I do know many civil servants who will give you all the reasons in the world why something cannot be done. So I always say when I was young, I'd rather take out a school teacher and not a nurse, because the nurse will say, patience, please. A school teacher will say, come on, let's do it all over again. Thank you, Chair.
Prof.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. To a large extent, I think I've been covered. So I'm left with just a few questions, especially on transformation, because I have a bias to emerging farmers and also to the previously disadvantaged. Now, there is a lot of talk when SAPA tell their story. The emphasis is on protection. I just want to find out from EMI whether they believe that protection of this industry is important and requires consideration, and if they agree with it, in what way do they think it should be protected? Still on that bias, I realize, of course, that the protection or the transformation in particular is the job of the government, but we always say that the government cannot do it alone. I'm therefore more than gratified when I see that SAPA has established a developing farmers' poultry organization which is helping the previously disadvantaged. About 270 have become members. It's very sad that 60% of these have had to close, but I just wonder if on the other side, EMI is doing likewise to try and help with this transformation. We are also told that what is imported is being dumped in South Africa, which implies that it is obtained at very low prices, and therefore my question is this discount benefit passed on to the consumer? Because normally when I go into a supermarket, I always find one price for all chickens. Do we pay the same for those that are bought cheaply from overseas as we pay for the South African product? Finally, I would say that some of the problems that members of SAPA are experiencing are due to inequality in subsidies. Now, I would just like to find out, how do South African poultry farmers compare with overseas farmers from whom we import when it comes to subsidies? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My concern, Chairperson, is that international conventions are setting the pace for us, and we are not helping to give advice to that. Why I'm saying that we are not helping, to me it is a question of agriculture is brought on board at the stomach stage, nearly at the tail end, while DTI was running with all the processes and Department of Health. To me, it's a question of the relevant departments, head of departments, should have been here to clarify some issues to us. I will not even waste time, Chairperson, to give a lot of talk here. To me, it's a question of we must meet as soon as possible. Food security, there is a threat for food security. I want to add to my colleague by saying that it is the poorest of the poor who is going to be the ones that are going to be most affected as usual. Chairperson, to go to what SAPA has given us is food for thought. The job losses, which is a huge concern, the abattoirs that are not approved of, that are approved of South Africa, but our officials didn't go to go and examine to benefit us. It's a concern. So we need them to come and answer and not the stakeholders. But we need agriculture and DTI to come and give us some explanation, Chairperson. It's no use that we are going to ask the industry to give us some answers today. They don't have, according to their presentation. They also don't have. But the only thing that I want to add, what my colleagues have said, is the relationship. Emerging farmers are not going to disappear. Alakhanis would must what is done for doing it. They are here to stay. So for us, please bear with us with the transformation. It must happen. I'm saying that, and I'm saying that very confidently, that it must happen. We must consider the upcoming farmers and not pull them down. Help them to develop the industry to help food security to be in South Africa. although we think globally, we must act locally and create our healthy local market. That is what we have to do here. And not pulling one another's hair out of tariffs. Tariffs that are not controlled by us. Fighting over things that were not created by us won't help us. Competition, competition has showed us in the slides that we are at ransom here. And we must come out of that ransom. Preaching many beautiful long English words won't help us here, Chairperson. For us, it's to come together to look whether do we have a plan? Is this plan talking to the National Development Plan blueprint? Are we going to achieve that? That is what we have to do. We must go to action and to implementation, Chairperson, and to the way out of this. Otherwise, we will speak forever and the country is going to stay hungry. I thank you.
Mama, this is my son.
Chairperson, thank you. Many things have been said, but all what I want to talk to the two stakeholders is that working together, we can achieve more. And also to say, you know, we need the relevant departments to meet this stakeholders, like we did with the red meat supplier, is what we should do with this, because the fighting, it won't help us, it won't help the poor people down out there. We want working together as South Africans, and we here, Chairperson, we are talking about food security and food safety, which is very, very important for South Africa. And we heard that other countries, they are able to stop other countries to bring other things in their country, so that they can give their own local market to grow and supply their own countries. But we are not able to do that. And another, this thing here, brining, I remember something when we talked about it. I visited the UK in 2009. You know, in their shelves, you will know that you buy a South African stuff, you buy a Colombian stuff, you buy this stuff, and they are branded. You know what you are buying from where, what you are buying from where. I wish even here we can have such an issue that when you buy a chicken, you must know that you are buying a brining chicken or not. What kind of a chicken you are eating, so that consumers can have a choice. But if they are just, you know, even these Brazilians which are coming here, we don't know as whether they are cheap, because I never seen saw a cheap chicken. All of them, they are not cheap ones. And if the consumer can have that opportunity to know what they are eating, it's what we said to the labeling, when we talk about the labeling. Consumers, we want to know for what we are eating. And with this brand thing, it's just like that. We want to know. But all in all, the two departments should make sure that they meet the two parties, so that they can sort these issues which they are not agreeing. And I think the department, because they are department, they have all the opportunities and everything to put it together, so that these people can work together. They can do so. I thank you, Chairperson.
I think a cross-cutting issue of interest here talks pretty much to food security, whether or not we need to go the direction that Nigeria has gone, wherein they all have to produce locally. They have to stop on their borders any food, poultry in this instance, that goes into Nigeria. So that talks pretty much to promotion of local produce with all the incentives and whatnot and whatnot. Of course, with surplus, there can be a discussion on that. That's what capital or capitalism survives on. That's how they make money, maximizing on surplus, on profits. I think that's the issue insofar as food security is concerned. And food safety, we've had a lot of talk about brining and the net effect in which it has on consumers, negatively, so to speak. We hear what Safa is saying, but I thought I might wish to start off with the matter raised by Mr. Panga. Having come to Parliament, both as Amy and also a supper. We need an apology from you guys. Because Parliament has to be respected and there has to be a decorum that must be maintained. I think that's where we should start before we get into many other things. We hear so many things being said. I also hear Amy, you also have a sense of lack of tolerance. I don't know how best to put it. Among others, you hear we need access to confidential information on these investigations. So that's what Amy say. Maybe there might not be anything wrong in participating in this discussion with the departments. But again, as I said earlier on, in a good message literally gets dismissed in the manner in which it is passed on. You want to participate in those discussions. I know for a fact that, the minister hosts what is called a CEO's forum. That's where a number of these things are taken. I would imagine if there no conclusion in some of those discussions, specific times are allocated. And also, on top of it all, this Parliament is always available for anybody to come before us and be able to table whatever concerns. We've heard here a number of people, members here have made examples about the Red Meat Producers Organizations and the concerns and the frustrations that they had until they came here. And all what we do, we bring the department on the labeling, we bring trade and industry, health, agriculture department. Now the issue about traceability equally is very key. Umama Pilus Muswane just made reference to the fact that you go to any of these stores, whether Europe or America, you are able to get a sense that who knows your no-name brand of Pick n Pay, where it comes from. Whether it is coming from, one person or saying, I'll better, find it easy for me to buy, country fair, to buy all of these other locally produced, chicken. But to buy no-name brand, where does it come from? So labeling also will talk to pretty much those issues. And then the input cost is a matter of serious concern. You want to play some political game, Mr. Palindalan, about it. It doesn't work that way. Now, you know, feed is one critical area. Electricity is another area. You know, we have been told from time to time that our electricity was the lowest in terms of cost. Now, South Africa, it is said, has been literally catching up with the world scenarios. Whether or not that is, you know, failure of government or not, you know, it's a political game. You don't want to play here. It doesn't belong here. Now, these are issues that of concern we all need to look into ourselves. If you are to bring energy department here, so be it. ESCOM here, so be it, so that we have one conclusive discussion on these matters. These are serious matters of concern. We don't want to play any political game about them. Because they talk again, food security and food safety. We will take upon the matter of compliance, especially, you know, as you know, docking takes place in Durban. We'll talk, take up on our program and then see how best we can fit that. I would imagine all of us will agree with that one. And then, of course, the issue related to job losses cannot be. We need to find a solution to that. We have no luxury of losing any jobs. Instead, the opposite is what we want to support as part of our oversight work. As government implements its programs, whether it is new growth path and so on, all those frameworks, ours as an oversight responsibility party, we need to say and see how best we promote those jobs rather than losing any jobs. One job loss is too much. I think those are some of the issues that we've made members. I don't think there is much. I was just keen also, Mr. Mm-hmm. Abram, on the halal food matter that you were raising. I didn't catch it conclusively, but I'm sure if you did catch it, yeah, that would be equally a matter of concern. Again, collaboration with these departments is going to be the driver out of all of these processes that we're engaged in. Yes, we shall receive, you know, the ultimate product from Mr. or Dr. What's his name? Rob Davis. Dr. Rob Davis. We shall receive that final, you know, announcement, which shall then take us to a point where we get a fuller briefing with all these departments being brought to us and see how best we take that process forward. Okay. We give over to you, perhaps if we start at the end with the Competition Commission.
Thank you, Chair. I've had very few questions to me. The one related to vertical integration. And I think, you know, and the question was, is there any recommendations we're making about this? This concept is, I've used in order to describe the structure of this industry. There's no kind of broad, sweeping policy recommendations I can make around the way the industry is structured. The way we would work is in the context of a particular case or complaint, we will understand what vertical integration means and in the context of that case make a ruling or a decision on how to solve a particular problem. So this is not a kind of broader policy issue for us. But I think it's important to just kind of understand what that means, because we've had a lot of discussion now about input costs. So what a vertical integrated sector means is that a lot of the inputs are inbuilt in the vertical integration. So, you know, if you move from animal feed to breeder stock to day-old chicks to growers, it's all in-house. So it's passed on internally, in a sense, if a firm is vertically integrated. What it also means, very importantly, is that it's a huge barrier to entry for a new entrant. In other words, if you want to come in and you're slotting in one of these levels, you're still dependent on somebody else for the other level. In order to be truly competitive, you need to come in as a vertically integrated firm
and that is kind of almost, that's very difficult or impossible to do. This is important because it goes to issues of transformation, it goes to who else can enter the market, and it's the threat of entry that keeps the current incumbents on their toes and competitive. In other words, if you know that your prices, if you're not efficient, if your prices are going to go up, somebody else is going to enter. We know that entry is difficult. Which brings us to the point, I mean, in our analysis then, the key threat of entry or the key competitive threat is imports. And if that stops becoming a key, a competitive threat, then, you know, you have an industry that has no competitive threat in it. They're going to live the good life. They're going to, you know, then there's nothing that's going to make them more efficient, make prices come down, etc. And I think that's a kind of important point. And then the last point about, I mean, perhaps an earlier point about vertical integration is that a lot of the practices work against new entrants at one layer because of issues of time, which I've explained, and issues of exclusivity. So, I mean, that's just the discussion around vertical integration. I don't have much knowledge on how this origin works. I'm not going to kind of venture. I'll leave that to other people. Except to say one other big point that's come out of this meeting is everybody's asking, why are we not entering other markets? Why are we not exporting? Okay, and that's like the big question. Well, the only one thing I'd like to say about this, I mean, of course, there are reasons around the unfairness, which is the argument being made. We've got unfair competition from Brazil and other places. But the point I want to make is that it's very unlikely that any firm will enter an international market or begin exporting, become competitive in an international market, which means exporting. It's very unlikely that that will occur if that firm is not subject to the discipline of competition in its own markets. In other words, what makes a firm internationally competitive and gives it the ability to export is when it faces a lot of competition internally, and that discipline of competition makes it become an exporter. And so I think that's an important point, and obviously, you know, tariff protection to a local firm is going to take away from the pressure on it to become competitive. Thanks.
Sapa?
Chair, I think from the outset I should point out that we unreservedly apologize for the bad behavior that we have displayed. SAPA is a well-mannered organization, and I would want to believe that we are just provoked into that misbehavior. But we submit that will not happen again. And we are now extending our hand of friendship to EMI. We would want to work with them as much as we would want to work with the portfolio committee and all other departments that are supposed to be involved in this exercise. We will be answering the issue of brining and the tariffs and the name dropping that was highlighted at the table. Kevin Lovell will reply on the brining as well as the tariffs, and Scott Pittman on my left will talk about the Dr. McKeith.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. Firstly, it might, I'm not sure if this assists the committee and if this is an inappropriate comment, please tell me so, but that I understand why ITAC could not be here, because the tariff application, because it's a policy instrument and not an unfair trade measure like anti-dumping, ITAC don't publish what they intend asking the Minister of Trade and Industry to do. So nobody actually knows what it is that they've actually recommended. All we do know, because Minister Davies has been on media saying it is on his desk, we don't actually even know exactly when it got to his desk. So in terms of the rules of the ITA Act, it has to stay confidential until it's gazetted by the Deputy Minister of Finance. Should it have happened already within this 2 month period, that I can't answer for. But I can understand that they would feel conflicted and as difficult for being here because of the specific nature of this. And before I deal with the tariff answers that have come through from the various honourable members of this committee, the picture that brought us to this is up until last year, all of SAPA's trade defensive actions were dealing specifically with unfair trade. Whenever we felt we could make a case for a dumping action, we made a case for a dumping action. Last year we made one against Brazil for two products, and ITAC found in our favour in their interim and in their final report. Minister Davies, in the letter that he wrote to the Commission of ITAC, which was sent to us and other parties, specifically said that he acknowledges that Brazil is dumping, but he didn't feel that anti-dumping tariffs were the correct way to deal with this, that we needed to approach this through what's an MFN, the most favored nation, the tariff application, and we also needed to develop a comprehensive strategy, which has come up a number of times in the discussion today. So those two actions actually flow from advice received from Minister Davies at the end of last year, and that's why we've followed this path, and I guess that's why we are here now. To answer the question that Honourable Mr. Bunga mentioned about us being called a developed country, that's clearly something that is not appropriate, but it was agreed in the previous dispensation, although the agreement itself was signed by President Mandela, that for some other reason, and I wasn't party to the discussion, so I can't claim to know why, we call developed. So what SALP has been doing, we've made a formal application to the Agricultural Trade Forum to be reclassified as a developing country, and so far the horticulture industry has agreed to join us in this action, and if all of the agricultural bodies can agree, we would then make a submission to DTI for us to be considered a developing country. What is the impact of that? Well, firstly, I assume that the committee is already aware that South Africa may support agriculture, all agriculture, with trade distorting measures to the extent of 2.1 billion rands per annum. We don't spend a cent. We don't have a budget for it. But it's in our current WTO agreement. If we were declared a developing country, we might be able to make further interventions in agriculture, if it was considered a good policy thing for the country to do. So we're trying to work in that space to gradually bring everybody together to move on into this tariff environment. And I must repeat something that I said earlier, and I was obviously trying to rush, and I guess I missed lots of things. But in the tariff application, we didn't try to use all of the policy space that was available. We only try to use enough to make the level playing field, because that's all we want to do is compete fairly. We don't actually want import volumes to stop. We just want to compete on things other than low price. And we don't set prices, by the way. The retailers do. And in the industry, it's called the blink test. He who blinks first, all the others have to follow. It's just the way it works. And it's a very effective mechanism for keeping food prices down, but it's not a very producer-friendly measure. So when it's mentioned that if we don't have imports, we won't be competitive, price is actually determined not by us, but the people who buy from us, because we don't sell to consumers. So then why don't we export? And the principal reason is that poultry is the second biggest meat in the world. It's about 36% of global production. Pork's the biggest meat. Poultry's growing faster than pork. Eventually it'll be the biggest. Of all that poultry, less than 12% is traded. Four countries export it. And if you call the EU one of those four. So what we're fighting is Brazil, the USA, the EU, and Thailand in that order. Argentina will come in time. And that's what all of this trade policy discussions about is dealing with those primary main exporters who make up over 80% of global export. Actions that we take as a country, because these are actions outside of the industry's control, would need to focus on that. So 12% of global trade, 12% of the trade in poultry is exports, and that's what causes the distortions. It's not a fundamentally important part of total trade. Then what do people eat? There are three rough markets. There's the whole bird market. For example, the Middle East and South America is largely a whole bird market. In most of Africa, it's whole bird and portions. And in Europe, it's primarily breasts and portions. And in the USA, primarily breasts and not whole birds. The USA, for example, exports just under 20% of what it produces, and 94% of that is leg quarters because they don't want to eat them. It's as simple as that. The EU imports just over 1 million tons and exports 750,000 tons. In other words, they theoretically should only import 250,000 tons if they actually ate the whole chicken, and we eat the whole chicken. So for us to export is, where are we going to export to? Because then what are we going to sell? Are we going to sell whole bird? Are we going to sell breasts? Are we going to sell portions? It's not that easy. Because trade is like love. You have to want, you know, to marry. You have to want to marry the other person. Once you've agreed you want to marry the other person, all these other structural things about is your home as good as my home? In other words, is your avatar the same as my avatar? Can be addressed. I don't think that we as an industry have perhaps tried as hard as we could have, but it's because we feel it's difficult to actually, it's going to be a difficult thing. And most countries, for example, want to be self-sufficient in their food from a food security point of view. They don't really want to rely on trade. They might trade with us until such time as they can look after themselves, but not after that. If I can just move on to brining, if I may, Honourable Chair. The Minister of Health has not made any pronouncements on brining of poultry himself, but the Director of Food Control has. And what he has said is that this is not a food safety issue, it's a quality issue and a labelling issue, which is some of the comments that have come out consistently across the questions that we received. That begs the question, are we labelling well enough, firstly? And secondly, are we going the right direction? I don't believe that the biggest single part of poultry should not be regulated, which is why we want a regulation that deals with brining of portions. But I do think that you can't just have better labelling, you also need a regulation, but a sensible regulation that actually regulates the practice. Because safety is not an on and off switch, it's a gradation. So having more salt in brine poultry makes it less appealing than unbrined poultry, but it doesn't make it unsafe. And one of the problems you have, and I gave an example where I spoke of bread and all bran flakes, but you don't cook bread and you don't cook all bran flakes. If we didn't brine the poultry, how much salt would people put in the pot? It's hot. No one can answer that question. So all the companies, by the way, have over the last 3 or 4 years reduced the levels of salt, and I would hope that they continue to reduce the levels of salt, but there would still be additional salt in the poultry. So I think you can answer this properly by saying it's not unsafe. You have raised the salt levels. You haven't raised them to the level that require immediate action. The Department of Health has issued a list of products that it wants to reduce the salt levels in, and chicken's not one of them at this round. It's bread and a few other things, potato crisps and things like that. And I don't know if I've missed anything on to answer your question, Honourable Member, almost all of the poultry that's slaughtered in South Africa is slaughtered under halal guidance, either through SANHA, the South African National Halal Authority, or the MJC, or sometimes both of them in the same abattoirs. We work fairly closely with SANHA, as in we have regular meetings discussing rules, religious interpretations. They then have legal contracts which they draw up with the individual companies, and they monitor them on that basis. So we try very hard to make sure that we are halal, and that's not simply because of the 2 million Muslims, but because of the very important role that Muslims play in food distribution in South Africa, which make it difficult for them to sell. They also have, and both SANHA and MJC have ways of approving the halal status of imported products, and that's something I can't speak directly, but they do have a system where they do deal with that.
Uh, Honourable Member, your question was about is this name dropping. Just to contextualise, the main point in that slide was about the transformation initiatives which both SAPA and individual companies are progressing, to give an idea for the breadth of the transformational imperatives. My company, which is Rainbow Chickens, is based in KZN, and so we made contact with the Premier at the time. And so the context of that statement was to articulate that it's happening at a company level, and as well as a SAPA level, and also to say this is not rubbish. I'm not making just a claim that's unsubstantiated, that it's real. So absolutely not. It's not name dropping. It's to give some context to the fact that it's a real initiative in progress in KZN.
Is he?
No, the province is. Of which he was the Premier, obviously.
Amy?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Are you happy for me to stay here? Would you like me to go back to my far end of the table? Thank you. I hope I'm going to cover the points that have been raised. If there are any others which I possibly miss, it's not on purpose. I'd be happy to be reminded of them. But firstly, on behalf of Amy, it was incorrect of us to bring, let's call it, a commercial dispute between bodies into this forum, and I hope that we'll be able to move forward in a constructive manner. We do apologize for our, let's say, discussions that brought the dirty laundry to bear here, and we would welcome recommendations from this committee in terms of how do we move forward from here in a more constructive manner to achieve all the objectives which have been discussed by various of the members here today. I'm going to deal with a number of the points. I hope I'm not going to deal too much in detail with where I've already discussed earlier, so that for brevity, but in terms of why can South Africa not export, it's not just about exports. We should be extracting the best value proportion of chicken, and if we take, for argument's sake, we should be looking at niche markets, both locally and in terms of export markets, and for argument's sake, we import into South Africa boneless chicken breasts, which are uninjected for use in certain of manufacturing industries. Those are domestic markets which, by and large, are untapped by local producers, which we could immediately start working on. In terms of exports to other countries, it's to do with disease issues and so on, to a large extent. And I think the only way that we can develop those export markets is by both industry and government having the same goals in terms of targeting specific markets where we choose to go and trade and where we believe we can supply based on our ratio of product required in South Africa and the quality and the status of our product, but it's got to be a joint initiative on that. In terms of the quantities under the five different customs tariff headings of what is imported and what percentage does imports make up of the local industry, we have the import statistics in terms of each of those five tariff headings, which we would be happy as Amy to supply the total numbers per tariff heading that are imported into the country. Unfortunately, we cannot tell you, based on the local production, what percentage it makes up of local production across each of those tariff headings, because each company and each country or industry around the world balances their carcass in a different way, but we would be happy to supply those figures. In terms of imports as a percentage of the market share, if you look at an extra 4 in the handouts, those numbers are there and it shows the ratios. I'm not going to go into the detail. It's all quite clear there. In terms of the job losses that we've been hearing about, and I think what we've got to do is take this into context of the worldwide economy at the moment. And if we take it, we have seen that a number of the South African companies are possibly not quite as profitable as what they have been before. But there are two very profitable companies, one which was an applicant to the duty reduction process, which is Sovereign Foods, which I noted wasn't up on the screen today, but Sovereign Foods for the year to February 2013 increased their bottom line, their net profits attributable to shareholders by 25% for the last financial year. So there's not everything that is doom and gloom about the local chicken industry. There are definitely glimmers of light. There are others which are not listed but we believe are doing very well, such as Farese Poultry, and they have chosen a sector of the market which doesn't concentrate on frozen chicken. So I think we need to look at that in the context of the total industry. The other issues which we need to deal with in terms of the increasing feed prices, where last year, due to the failed grain crop in the U.S., world prices of grain skyrocketed. Already, forecasts for this year's grain prices is that those will come off by 30%. So that's going to have a huge, huge, huge impact in terms of the final cost of growing chicken. And that was due to a weather issue. It was not in our control, it was not in the Americans' control, unless they can create rain clouds which will be able to, let's call it, allow their grains to grow and so on. So I think we need to be able to take out and exclude from these deliberations where there were abnormal circumstances of a short nature. In terms of compliance and the, let's say, sources or rules of origin, there are a number of issues that need to come into place. There are labeling legislation in South Africa. In terms of rules of origin and the labeling of country of origin, the Agricultural Product Standards Act makes it very clear that the country of origin has to be labeled on all products in the retail space in South Africa. That is, that assigneeship or that responsibility for that lies directly with the Department of Agriculture. That has not been assigned or outsourced to an outside party, as such of the red meat assigneeships have been done, but this one has been retained by the Department of Agriculture and would be for policing there. In terms of imports at the port of entry, the rules are very clear as to what is required and the standards are high. And if there's a policing issue, we as AMI would be very, very supportive of making sure that the policing at ports of entry is done correctly. But, and there is the rider to this, we can't have it one-sided. There are rules relating to local production as well, and those rules also need to be applied and complied with at the same time. So in terms of standards, it's not just about imports, but it is about the entire value chain of the chicken industry. Unfortunately, and we saw this with the Orion matter, which I think the committee here is very aware of, there were certain deficiencies in terms of, let's say, passing the buck between different regulators. It's not for lack of rules, but crooks will be crooks, and the crooks need to be caught, the crooks need to be weeded out. Crooks are not only importers, they are also domestic crooks, and that I think we see throughout the fabric of society that we're living in South Africa, that we definitely as importers support wholeheartedly getting the playing fields level for all participants within those fields. In terms of retaliation by trade partners, at the moment South Africa seems to have embarked on a trade, if you want to call it, restrictive basis in terms of imports. And there's been a lot of issue relating not only to the chicken we're talking about, but in the pork industry and in the frozen potato chip industry. And these protectionist activities, unfortunately, are going to start resulting in certain retaliatory measures by certain of our trade partners. And I'm not going to repeat what was discussed earlier, but it is in the slides. We're already seeing it. And there have also been increased duties on products like pasta and shellfish, which are effectively also all agricultural products. And we must be very careful we don't do unto others what we don't want done unto ourselves. In terms of trade diversion of Brazilian product via the EU, we've heard rumors of this in terms of the trade. We have done our own investigations, and it is extremely unlikely. Firstly, you're talking there about two legs of transport. Remember, shipping in containers on vessels has a cost. So you would have to export the product from Brazil to Europe. We heard earlier, not from AMI, from the Poultry Association, there's a 20, or I think it was a 6 rand duty to import Brazilian chicken into Europe. If you take that and then take the costs of repackaging and relabeling at the high European costs, that is impossible because you then have to bring it back to South Africa. So firstly, the cost would be prohibitive to do that. Secondly, in terms of the free trade agreement, the TDCA, between South Africa and Europe, the rules of origin are extremely strict. And the rules of origin, for products to come into South Africa duty-free, you need to get what they call a Euro 1 certificate. And a Euro 1 certificate is declared to customs on arrival in South Africa. That is a Department of Trade and Industry to a Department of Trade and Industry certificate, so it's government-to-government certificate on the trade side, and then you have the health certificate on the other side. So you would have to have wholesale collusion to defraud the Brazilian, the European, and the South African economy to be able to get that right. ladies and gentlemen, in my opinion, absolutely impossible that anyone's going to be able to get that right. The brining levels, we believe, need to be dealt with, and I'm not going to mention any further on that. We agree that AMI is not the enemy, but we have a very important role to play in terms of being able to balance the industry, and obviously if we can enter into export markets, we would have a very important role to play there in terms of being able to facilitate those exports. We hear about cheap imports, and we've been hearing about that for a long time. Imports, we do not sell as being cheaper. We actually sell imports as being a different product. Chicken leg quarters that come into South Africa carry the freight charge to bring it into South Africa. It carries the costs of clearing. It carries the duties that go together with importing product. And that product then has to be transported through to wherever the point of sale is. Plus the importer needs to make a margin. Once that product, because remember, imported product is not brought into South Africa in the retail form that we see it in the supermarket shelves in South Africa. The product is brought in bulk. It then has to be packed to be able to make it retail ready, and there's a cost to that. And those products that come in to South Africa are not being sold at a discount to South African price. We dispute wholeheartedly that imports are price suppressing in any way whatsoever. We believe that the consumer is taking their hard-earned money and choosing to buy the product because they are differentiating that product against the local product. So we mustn't believe that there are cheap imports coming into South Africa. In terms of the halal issue and food certification, there are competent and relevant bodies, and people who wish to bring in imported product which is halal certified have the ability to go to various bodies. There's NITE, NJC, SANA doesn't recognize currently any imported product, but there is the ability to get the relevant certifying bodies to inspect and certify products that is of origin outside South Africa that is certified halal, and they will only do it against bodies that from external to South Africa that they have agreements or relationships or let's say confidence in as to being able to certify halal product correctly. In terms of SACU support and trade in the SACU countries, for argument's sake, Mozambique. For non-SACU countries, the import duties on chicken into Mozambique are 30%. For SACU countries, the duties are 10%. There's already a 20% duty advantage going into, for argument's sake, Mozambique. Mozambique is one of the largest markets for whole chickens out of Brazil. We have a price advantage there, and we should be taking advantage of those types of things. I'm almost done, Mr. Chairman. We're told that imports into South Africa are dumped. There are very, very specific duties internationally agreed between World Trade Organization members. They call dumping duties. For whatever reason, and we cannot explain the Minister of Trade and Industry's decision last year not to implement dumping duties on Brazil, not that we are acknowledging dumping from Brazil. The Minister chose not to implement what his administrative body had found. If there are dumping activities into South Africa from any country, those dumping duties can be brought to play, and we should use the relevant measure. We heard about subsidies or a question about subsidies. Likewise, if there are subsidies which are illegal, there are measures called countervailing duties to deal with subsidized agricultural exports, well, subsidized exports. So we must use the relevant tool if there's a requirement for the relevant issue. We shouldn't be using the wrong tool for the wrong matter. And then we believe that market intervention should be minimized at all costs because it just leads to unproductive industries. And we would ask the committee here and all members here to please remember in all of your deliberations and in any way you can assist us, the consumer is sovereign. Thank you.
Thanks for all of those responses. As we have said, this is a beginning of a process. As we shall be receiving a full report from the Minister of Trade and Industry, it shall be announced, of course, for the Department of Agriculture and foreign tariffs trading industry shall be expected to be here. We're also included out, am I right? So I think that briefing assists us, as we had initially mentioned that ours is to be better equipped and empowered. So I think the objective, I want to believe and submit that has been achieved. Tomorrow we shall have land banks before us. Thus far the venue is S35 at the Old Assembly. In COP, sorry. And then on Friday we are still continuing with the GMO briefing by the departments of agriculture, science, and all of those departments. It has been in the news, I must mention, members, that once again our sea waters continue to be polluted. In Richards Bay, almost 10,000 tons, you know, of coal. It is also mentioned that 50,000 tons already has been dumped in the seawaters. So it makes it urgent, the discussion we spoke about earlier, because these are activities that are continuing and crimes against those poor animals. You know, they continue to go on unabated. Members, I think we have a little time. If we do have any, I would imagine during the break around 3 o'clock, we can sneak out and go and grab something. We don't have that time until we meet tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you.